Welcome to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from January 25th, 2002.
From the high desert in the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, whatever the case may be, wherever you are in all 24 time zones covered by this radio program, Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell. And, oh, we have so much to do tonight. It's going to be open lines all the way tonight. Anything at all you want to talk about is fair game. However, because of the final call I had last night really spooked me. And I asked the gentleman to contact me, and he did. And I've got Ken on the line, and he'll be with us here in a bit. It was the last story told last night, and I want to hear the whole story. And actually from the beginning, because I understand a lot of you would have missed some of it, and we can, of course, get it now in more detail. So what he was describing may not turn out to be, but it sounded to me like, and in fact, what we discussed last night with Mothman and all the rest of it, Mothman really is a monster, isn't he? Mothman is a monster. And so I thought, I have never opened a monster line. Therefore, I would ask any of you who have encountered what you would consider to be a monster. That's a broad category. Monster is a big category. If you have ever actually and truly encountered what you would call a monster, then I would like to hear from you tonight as the program progresses. Now, the news. Now it's all Enron. Oh, man, is it Enron. Boy, I hit that one on the head. So did somebody who predicted at the beginning of the year. First time I saw an Enron story, I said, oh, man, here it comes. Clifford Baxter, 43, a former Enron Corporation executive who reportedly complained about the company's questionable accounting practices and resigned last May, was found shot to death in a car today. An apparent, apparent suicide. Now, the House Energy Commerce Committee had asked to visit with Mr. Baxter, and, you know, obviously there's going to be speculation that Mr. Baxter didn't want to visit with them much. And so he put a gun to his head. Must be some story here, huh? The White House today ordered a review of $70 million worth of federal contracts with Enron and the Arthur Andersen accounting firm to determine whether the embattled companies are worthy of government business. Also today, the U.S. Comptroller General set new limits on the consulting work that accounting firms can do for any federal agency they audit or for firms receiving federal money. Meanwhile, two lawmakers urged the Chief of Congress investigative arm to take the Bush administration to court for refusing to reveal its contacts with the energy industry. Whew. This one seems like it's gigantic, and it seems like it's going all the way to the top, and it seems like it's doing that very, very quickly. So, a gentleman in Big Fork, Montana. I mean, everybody out there is struggling to try and grasp and understand the magnitude of what's happened with Enron here. My God, what's happened? Well, we don't obviously have those answers yet, but Buck in Big Fork, Montana, tries to help you out here as he writes, understanding Enron's problem. In case you were wondering how Enron came to be in so much trouble, here's a brief explanation reputedly given by an Aggie professor to explain the whole thing in terms his students could understand. Capitalism. Simple. You have two cows. You sell one and buy a bull. Your herd multiplies. The economy grows. You sell them and retire on the income. Extremely simplified, right? And that doesn't explain Enron. Now, does this explain Enron? This is Enron venture capitalism, according to Buck. You have two cows. You sell three of them to your publicly listed company using letters of credit opened by your brother-in-law at the bank. Then execute a debt equity swap with an associated general offer, so you get all four cows back with a tax exemption for five. The milk rights of these six cows are transferred via an intermediary to a Cayman Island company secretly owned by the majority stockholder who sells the rights to all seven cows back to your listed company. The annual report says the company owns eight cows with an option to buy one more. Now, do you see why a company with $62 billion in assets is declaring bankruptcy? No, I don't, but it was a hell of a story. let's see what else is going on. The Mideast continues to implode. It looks like President Bush is considering whether he would like to sever ties with Mr. Arafat. There's a big bunch of trouble possibly brewing over there, and the Palestinian Authority is saying that breaking ties with Arafat would be sort of like just setting the whole thing off, you know, using words kind of like that. Meanwhile, the Israeli government sent warplanes to attack Palestinian security installations in the West Bank and Gaza after a Palestinian suicide bomber wounded 24 in a crowded Tel Aviv pedestrian mall. Nothing ever changes there. But, you know, if they exorcised Mr. Arafat from, well, of course, the entire peace joke anyway, peace right over there, prospects are going to disappear. I maintain they never really appeared in the first place. There was never peace there, and there may never be peace there. A stem cell has been found, folks, in adults that can turn into every single tissue in the body. This is an amazing discovery. Until now, only stem cells from early embryos were thought to have such properties. Should the finding be confirmed, it's going to mean cells from your own body could one day be turned into all sorts of perfectly matched replacement tissues and even organs. In other words, they've found a stem cell, they believe, in adults, that will multiply, given the right encouragement, whatever you do to them, into all kinds of replacement stuff for you. Cloning would become unnecessary. We wouldn't need to clone if this is true. Princeton University says this work is very exciting. They can apparently differentiate into pretty much everything that an embryonic stem cell can differentiate into. The cells were found in the bone marrows of adults by a University of Minnesota a researcher. And now, of course, everybody is saying quickly that extraordinary claims require extraordinary proof. And New Scientist is reporting on this, but, you know, nobody knows for sure whether it's the real deal. It, you know, we can certainly hope that it is the real deal. Anyway, right now, they're thinking they really have done it. Now, let's think about that. So, any little scraping of you, any scraping of your skin, or perhaps plucking one of your hairs out, would give the scientists all they need to grow you anything you want. Need a liver? Hey, one liver on the way. Need a replacement heart? One that's really you? On the way. Of course, you can imagine the price tag for this is going to be heavy duty. Need another right leg? Let's brew one up. From your own cells, from your own DNA instructions. One little tiny stem cell can do all of this, is what they're saying. Absolutely amazing. An amazing, amazing discovery, if true. So on this one, everybody, it would change everything, so you should hold your breath and hope that it is true. And then maybe we're not going to be going down the cloning road we thought we were. Oh, these discoveries, they come very quickly. Very quickly, don't they?
Streamlink, the audio subscription service of Coast to Coast AM, has a new name, Coast Insider. You'll still get all the same great features for the same low price, just 15 cents a day when you sign up for 1 year. The package includes podcasting, which offers the convenience of having shows downloaded automatically to your computer or MP3 player, and the iPhone app with live and on-demand programs. You'll also get our amazing download library of 3 full years of shows. Just think, as a new subscriber, over 1,000 shows will be available for you to collect, enjoy, and listen to at your leisure. Plus, you'll get streamed and on-demand broadcasts of Art Bell's Somewhere in Time shows and 2 weekly classics. And as a member, you'll have access to our monthly live chat sessions with George Norrie and special guests. If you're a fan of Coast, you won't want to be without Coast Insider. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up today. Looking for the truth? You'll find it on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
When you look at what's going on around this planet, it's almost as if someone has got a playbook to try to control all these countries all of a sudden. I've always said that not everything is a conspiracy, but a lot of it is.
You know, when you start looking into things, there's only a certain set of conclusions you can reach, and unfortunately, this is one of them. You know, it's very, very hard not to see things like that when you start looking at things in a larger picture.
Now we take you back to the night of January 25th, 2002, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Let us begin where we left off last night. The story was getting so interesting that I asked the gentleman last night, that would be Ken, to email me and give me some contact information, and he did. And so here is my last caller from last night, Ken. Hello, Ken.
Hi, Art. How are you tonight?
I'm all right. I'm really happy you decided to come back on with me tonight, and I appreciate your taking the time to do that.
No problem.
Let us begin as we did last night. You have the luxury now of a little more time, and you can tell us in a little more detail exactly what happened.
Exactly what happened.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, New Year's Eve of 2000, we moved into this house. And
where are you, Ken?
I'm out of Portland, Oregon.
Right.
And the house that we moved into was built in 1910. So it's a fairly old home.
Right.
And from day one, Sherry, my girlfriend, she just, something about the place wasn't right to her. You know, she just felt that there was something that was off there.
Was this a fixer-upper, that kind of deal?
It was what was a rental, and it was through a friend that they weren't going to rent it, but I needed a place, and they said, sure, you know. It had been sitting vacant for like 6 months, I guess, 6 to 8 months. Later, we came to find out that the gal that lived there before just up and left.
The way you ultimately had to?
Exactly. And since then, we've found out some other stuff, too. But
okay, but let's not jump ahead. Go to the beginning. You moved into the house.
Yeah.
Lucky to get in. Sherry didn't much like it. But
it was, you know, a little work and fix it up some, you know, it might, you know, come around, you know, feel a little better.
Right.
Well, she's kind of like she's able to really pick up on stuff. You know, sees things that other people don't see, you know, or feel stuff. You know, she's really in tune with what's going on around her a lot more than I am till now. But,
in other words, you would have described yourself as what? Kind of skeptical of this?
Yeah, very
sort of
skeptical.
Thing? Okay. You know? All right, good.
And, so, you know, it started off with, she said that she'd seen, like, angels around the house.
Angels?
Yeah. you know, which I thought, you know, that was kind of odd. And she says, well, it's a good thing, you know. And, okay, so I never seen him. And, but she said there was always this one out by this tree, and then he'd be in this other room. She had this thing about being in the kitchen all the time, that she felt safe there, didn't like being in any other rooms in the house, especially the front room area.
Yeah, rooms can have a feel to them.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
And so this went on, and it was kind of funny, because every now and then, like, sometimes I'd fall asleep on the couch, and I'd be woke up to, like, somebody whispering in your ear, you know, like, really weird, kind of,
yes,
like, saying something, and it's like, you know, like, leave me alone, you know, I'm trying to sleep, and look, and there's nobody there.
Uh-huh.
So, okay, you know, I just kind of, like, oh, I was dreaming, you know, I just passed
right
it off.
Right.
And then there were several times I'd be sitting in the front room by myself, and maybe the kids might be upstairs, and she was at work, and I'd be playing a, you know, video game or something, just kind of biding some time, and you get that feeling that somebody's walking up behind you, like you can hear the floor kind of squeak, you know, and you turn around and there's nobody there.
Oh.
So this would happen off and on, you know. It wasn't, you know, it's just kind of like, okay, you know, just my imagination running rapid, never really put anything together. So a little bit later, then we started hearing the little girl laughter. You know, this is, you know, a couple of months of being there. Most of the time when I heard it, I would be upstairs in the bathroom, and it was like right outside the door, but nobody'd be there at the house. It only happened when nobody was there.
Do you, your children, do you have a little girl?
I have an 11-year-old daughter and a 12-year-old son.
Ah, no, and, no really little girls.
No, no, you know, this is, you know, younger than what they would be, and it's just like little laughter, like he was playing with a friend. Or
just something outside your door?
Right outside the bathroom door, yeah.
Audible, loud, just like you would hear it if there was a little girl.
Exactly.
Right.
My kids were right there in the house. You know?
All righty.
I'd be the only one in there.
Right.
And then, like, Sherry would see shadows move all the time in the house. You know, like, oh, there it goes. You know, it was in the front room, but I wouldn't see it. Well, then I started, after a while, catching out of the corner of my eye, seeing something move. Sometimes in the bathroom upstairs, there was a mirror on the back wall, and if you had the medicine cabinet open, you could see right into the hallway when I was shaving.
Right.
Now, this one particular day, I'm in there shaving, and I see this go from my room into my son's room.
See what go?
A shadow figure, something black, 4 feet in height, you know, like a kid or something like that.
Small.
Yeah, so
okay,
right after that, my son comes running up the stairs, and I say, you know, hey, Brandon, is there somebody with you? And he's like, nope, by myself. I'm like, okay, I just must be seeing things again, you know. So this kind of keeps going on. And then it was kind of odd because that first summer there in the house is real drafty. I mean, it's, you know, really old. It's not insulated. Well, it's, you know, 90 degrees out in the summertime. And when we come home from work, you'd have to go around and open up all the doors to let the heat in because it was so cold in the house that you'd have to wear a coat.
Right.
You know, and it's like, this, there's something not right. Sherry kept bringing that up, and I'm like, oh, we got the shade of the trees, you know. You know, skeptics, they try to, you know, make reason out of anything.
Yes, of course. The brain struggles to do that.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which I did all the time. And so this went along. And then then went through that winter, and there was just somewhere activity going on. And then her son come to live with us. He was living out of state and come up. And the first night that he was there, we were talking about, you know, what he's been doing and what's going on. And so we went up to bed, and he slept downstairs in the front room on the couch. I don't know, what time was it? About probably 11:30, like that. Sherry gets woke up by this, my son's radio in his room blasting. You know, it's like, why did he set his alarm, you know, get up? So she gets up, goes walking in there, and it's just blasting loud. And she's shaking him, trying to wake him up, and he won't wake up.
Mm-hmm.
And the radio, which he normally has like on All These But Goodies and stuff, is saying over and over again, time to kill, time to kill. Which just freaks her out.
Time to kill?
Yes. So she rips the cord out of the wall, turning the radio off, walks out of the room, and there's Greg is sitting at the top of the stairs, just white as a ghost, looking at her. And he goes, I am not sleeping down there by myself. Can I sleep in your room? Because something has just pinned me on the couch.
Ken, hold on. We're here at the bottom of the hour. There's more to this. He was the last caller last night. You didn't get to hear all of this. Tonight you are. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM. Then I bet you can tell.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from January 25th, 2002. Listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from January 25th, 2002.
Ken tells me Sherry, his girlfriend, is there and prepared to verify everything you're hearing from Ken right now. I'm Art Bell. Don't move.
We take you back to the night of January 25th, 2002, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
All right, back now to Ken. Ken, you know, if I had encountered a radio blaring out time to kill my child's room, hey... that would be when I'd pack up and haul butt. And that's what some people on Fast Blaster are saying here. It would be time to go.
Uh-huh. Which is, that's one of the things that we have been discussing between ourselves and what was going on. Because something would happen like that,
yes,
or something else. And it seemed like within 15 to 20 minutes time that it was like you never even knew it happened. Like there was some type of control, manipulation, whatever it was, or the power that this thing had.
Now, by that, do you mean you didn't remember the event, or do you mean the event just didn't seem...
It would just seem like everything just went passive on it. You know, like there was really nothing going on, you know. It was in the back...
Okay.
You know, it was like something would push everything to the back of your mind.
Okay.
I mean, even the stuff that happened to Sherry, that, you know, I mean, she would be traumatized, and it was within 2 or 3 hours, we were back to doing our normal daily routine.
Yeah, I guess that's really the way life is. I've had a lot of traumatic events in my life, and they do pass, and, you know, life does go on, as the old saying goes, and so, yeah, I understand. Okay.
And, you know, time and time again, we talked about getting out of there, you know, but it just, it wouldn't. You know, we make up excuses about stuff or something, or, you know, it didn't seem so bad. Yeah, you know, or Sherry would try to leave, like, that's it, I've got to get out of here. And I would talk to her, and she would end up staying.
Right.
You know? And it wasn't until after we were out of there that we were able to really start putting the pieces together.
Well, after this business with the radio, what then? How bad did it get? I mean, last night you mentioned that Sherry was physically attacked by something.
She was. And actually, the first time was just prior to Greg's attack. It was just before he came. It was like a week earlier. And so I kind of screwed up on my timeline there. But she was attacked, and we just thought that, well, we won't say nothing to him.
She was attacked how?
She was sleeping in the bed upstairs and was awoke out of the sleep, being pinned with her face down. She was laying on her stomach with her face stuffed into the pillow and just being pushed into the bed. You know, she couldn't even, you know, she was able to get her head turned around, and there was nobody there. She was just being held down, you know, and it was like...
by a completely unseen force of some kind.
Exactly. You know, couldn't see it, but could feel it.
All right. Now, Ken, it's not that I doubt what you're saying.
Right.
But if you would be willing to put Sherry on for a moment, this might be a time when she should describe what happened to her.
Okay.
Is it? If she's willing.
Here she is.
Okay.
Hello?
Hi, Sherry.
Hi.
Thank you, first of all, for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Sure.
Ken was just beginning to tell me about being pinned down or something in bed, and I thought I ought to hear this from you.
Yes. Yeah, I was sleeping, and I just woke up to my face being shoved into the pillow. My body was totally paralyzed. I couldn't move. And it was a terrific amount of weight that was laying on top of me.
Did it feel like a body?
It felt like a body.
Or not a blunt weight, but a body.
A body, yes, definitely.
Okay.
And I had other occasions where it would just come in and just touch my leg. And you could actually see the comforter indent with the... you couldn't see anything there, but you could feel it, and you could see the comforter move. And at times it would tuck you in just like you were a child. Not hurt you, just tuck your comforter all the way around you. It was really, it was terrifying. And it got to, after that happened, I refused to go to bed by myself. I refused to go to any room but the kitchen. I just sat in the kitchen for almost 2 years straight.
Oh, my God. This went on for how?
2 years. Mm-hmm.
For 2 years?
2 years.
Is it over now?
No. I hope it is. We're Christians, and we've been going to church, and we've had people praying for us, and we moved into this house, which has, it's a brand new home, and nobody's lived here. And our first night here by ourselves, I was just rolling over to put my arm around Ken, and this horrible laugh, like it was in a tunnel, but it was right up above us, and it was
so
really...
So, whatever this is, it has followed you.
It sure seems like it.
So it's not even over now.
Uh-uh.
It may be there now.
It could be. I haven't felt anything.
Have you been, have you had physical marks, bruises from
I've
any...
I've had a bite. On my back, in the middle of my back from it.
A bite on your back?
Mm-hmm.
Teeth marks.
It took 6 weeks for it to heal.
Oh, my God. How did this happen?
I was just up in the bedroom, and it was just, ow, you know?
You mean just, you were standing, laying down in bed?
What? I was standing in the bedroom, and it was just a... and, you know, just pain in my back. And so I went downstairs and had Ken lift my shirt up to look at my back, and
right.
there it was.
And there's a bite mark.
Mm-hmm.
That takes 6 weeks to heal?
It took 6 weeks, and he kept putting peroxide, and it, you know, it was quite something.
You know, I asked Ken, and I'll ask you too, and maybe you'll have the same answer, but after going in to your son's room and hearing a radio blaring, "Time to kill, time to kill."
Uh-huh.
Most people would be so out of there, Sherry.
Oh, I've tried. I was so terrified. I was so scared. And yet it was, there was some kind of a power that took over. And Ken was such a skeptic, even though he was hearing the things that were happening. You know, he said, well, nothing happens when you're with me.
I take it you were not as much of a skeptic.
I was not. Well, I'd never had anything like this ever happen to me before. And I didn't know what it was, but But I really believe that I knew I wasn't crazy, and I knew this stuff was really happening to
me.
Well,
what about your children?
Well, we kept it quiet. They're very young, and we didn't want to frighten them, but we asked questions to make sure that nothing was hurting them.
So they really weren't being affected? Okay, so they weren't being affected particularly.
No, but my children, my oldest one's 26, and my younger one is 22, and they both had incidents with it, too.
Oh.
And the 22-year-old is the one that came into our room and slept on the floor that night that he was pinned. But he had absolutely no clue, because I'd never mentioned this to him at all until that night when he was attacked and we told him what had been happening.
Well, it sounds like sometimes it was, you say, it tucked you in, for example.
Yeah.
So that almost seems benign. That almost seems friendly.
Well, as the story goes, I thought there was just one thing there. But after the end of the story, you'll hear that there might have been several more.
Okay, but everything Ken's been telling us is basically the way you remember it, too.
Oh, yeah.
And even down to the point where after these things would occur, like the radio and the rest of it,
we stayed.
It would sort of fade from your mind in a way that lessened the importance of what had just happened in some way, causing you to stay?
No. I would have anxiety even. I didn't want to go back to the house. I tried to stay away. We were bike riders, and we...
So it didn't fade as much for you?
Yeah. It didn't fade as much for me. I was terrified.
Wait, do you have any sense, any idea of why you thought the kitchen was a safe place?
I didn't have the feeling of, any other room, it was just it just go up your spine. You could just feel it like breathing on you. And
all of that was not present in the kitchen?
It wasn't in the kitchen.
So you spent a lot of time in the kitchen, right?
I spent 2 years of my, I wouldn't go watch TV even. I couldn't sit in the living room at all, which would aggravate the family, but I was that uncomfortable. I could not sit in any room but the kitchen. And then I would stay up and wait until Ken would go to bed at night, because I would not go up and sleep in that bedroom by myself.
That's like some kind of prison.
It was.
For you.
It was a prison to me. It was really horrible.
Okay, well, I may ask you to come back. I don't know, but I wanted to hear your words, and I just have. You can remember as plainly as day that radio blaring out?
I can remember everything just as if I'm standing there. Yep, everything is very clear.
Okay, let me talk once again to Ken, if I could, please.
Okay.
Hello?
Hi, Ken.
Howdy.
Okay, so I guess we haven't even heard it all yet?
No. There's more.
Okay.
So, oh, great, the phone's going to start going. Yeah, go up and get the other phone. Let's see, where are we? After Greg had been pinned, there was a time he went out one night. We were setting up, and was talking in bed, and we heard the door downstairs shut, and we heard girl after, and we thought, oh, Greg's home, and brought some friends with him. So she gets up, Sherry goes downstairs, comes running back up there. There's nobody there, which there was nobody there. He never came home that night. And so just little things like that kept going on until he had a girlfriend move in with him, and Jamie started encountering.
It sounds like you're getting ready to change telephones here or something.
Yes, I am.
All right, well, that's not a problem. You know, I mean, here's your wife almost not willing to come out of the kitchen. How were you handling that?
Hello?
Yes, hi.
Hold on a second. Let me turn this volume up if there's one on it. Where is it at?
Okay, you're on some other phone now.
Are you there?
Yes. Uh-huh. I'm here.
Trying to get this volume on this phone to...
Can you hear me?
Can you hold on for just a second?
Sure. Sure. Sounds like we are having technical difficulties.
I got a phone problem.
Yeah, I can tell.
Oh, great.
I'm hearing you all right. And
there we go.
And by the way, you need to turn the radio off in the background if you can.
Okay. She's downstairs with the other phone. She must have just hung it up.
Okay. All right, sounds good. Now,
yeah,
what I asked you, I'm going to ask you again now, Ken.
Okay.
You've got a girlfriend who is spending almost every day for 2 years in her kitchen.
Right.
How did you handle that?
Very difficultly. I sat in there with her most of the time and stuff. It was like we knew that we needed to move, but we didn't have the funds available to. We were just getting by at the time.
Right. What kind of work do you do?
I'm a mechanic.
You're a mechanic. And does your girlfriend also work?
She was laid off at the time, so,
okay.
You know.
So she was home all the time.
Right.
Uh-huh.
But she would try to stay gone, you know, during the daytime if I wasn't there.
But as, yes, I understand. As a skeptic, what did you think was going on? I mean, did you think that she was having problems, or had you seen enough of this? So you knew she wasn't having problems. It's just that y'all had a problem.
Well, that's kind of it. You know, it was like
you don't have to answer any of these. I'm trying to get to the bottom of how you reacted.
Right. Well, I started getting really frustrated about it. Is how I was ended up reacting, which is it's kind of weird because since we've gotten out of there and we've been sitting there talking about it, it's like, you know, I knew what was going on, but something wasn't letting me deal with it the way that I should have.
Uh-huh.
You know, it was like there was some, whatever it is that's there, it has an agenda. It's got a plan of something that it wants to happen.
Did you ever get an idea of what you think that was?
I don't know. We've talked to a few people. There's one guy in particular that I've really done a lot of talking with that he's done a lot of ghost research. And on properties, anyway, he does a lot of research on the back, on the history, like, you know, a place where it's haunted.
Right.
And he'll get the history all the way back to the original landowners.
Right.
And try to find out what's happened on that property.
So what do you know about that house?
That's the thing. We've been having a little problem trying to find. Yeah, I need to get a hold of Historical Society to get the original back stuff of what's going on.
All right.
But I did find out that there was a family that lived in the house 20 years earlier that in the middle of the night left and never came back, left everything behind, food, clothes, toys, everything, furniture.
They just left?
They just left.
Strong hint there, Ken.
Mm-hmm. So we didn't know, we didn't find that out until after we were out.
Gotcha. Okay.
You know, and it's like, whoa, you know, we start, you know, because I'm really trying to research this stuff and talking to people and come to find out that there's several houses in the area there that have hauntings all the time.
As a skeptic, when your wife pulled up her blouse or whatever and you saw a bite mark on her back, how'd you react to that?
It was like, how in the hell did that get there, you know? I mean, I knew she didn't have it earlier, so it's kind of like...
In other words, at what point did your skepticism fall away to, I suppose, terror?
That would be the morning that I seen it.
It? This
yes.
Dark, small, whatever.
Yes. It's a week's time but that has just built up into this chaotic frenzy of us bailing. In a very rapid fashion.
When you left the house, right?
Right.
Okay, so it got suddenly much worse.
It did. Greg and Jamie had moved out, and that was the point where it started getting worse. They moved over to Eastern Oregon, and
uh-huh.
they're over there now.
Okay.
And after he had left, the activity started picking up. So this one friend of ours, she come over and had like some ideas on how to get rid of, you know, the ghost in the house or whatever it was.
Right.
And was trying that, you know, and it's like Sherry's going, she's pissing it off. You know, she's really making this thing agitated. And
what was she doing?
There was
religious
sorts of things?
We had done it. We had anointed the house. We'd, you know, prayed in every room. We commanded it for the name of Jesus Christ and God to vacate the premises, you know, and rebuked it. And whatever it was, wasn't going to leave. And we found out later that some things take a whole congregation of people to get rid of.
Huh.
But,
So what began to happen the last week,
Okay, so she had come over here a few times trying to get rid of this thing. Then,
Kicking it off.
Anyway, Sherry and Wendy were outside at the tree out there, and Sherry's going, I really feel something out here by this tree. So to humor them, I went out and dug a hole. And a friend of mine, he's search and rescue, and I worked with him for years doing search and rescue.
You dug a hole?
I dug a hole.
They said there's something strange by it. Did they conclude beneath it, and is that how you started digging, or did you decide to dig?
This is the thing here is the house is built on a knoll, and we found out that the place that was across the way was intended to be a mortuary. So that leads me to believe that in the pioneer days, they used knolls as like family burial sites.
Well, Ken, what did you think you were digging for?
I don't know. I was going to dig a hole to appease them so that I could get some rest. This is 9 o'clock at night in the dark of the light. I'm out there digging this hole. I'll tell you what, I'll call my friend up, have him come over with his dog that he uses for finding buried people or drowning victims.
Yes.
And if it hits on the hole, then we've got something. If it doesn't, okay, you know. So we go to bed that night, get up in the morning. Sherry was working at that time. She left just before I got up. I got up, come downstairs, and I'm pouring a cup of coffee and look out the window, and the hole's filled in.
What?
Yeah. The hole's filled in.
How much of a hole had you dug?
I dug it like it's 2.5 feet around by 3 feet deep.
That's a big hole.
Yeah, and it's filled back in. And so I called her. She called me on her lunch break and asked her if she filled the hole in, and she said no. And I talked to Wendy, and Wendy said no. And it's like, okay, and nobody filled the hole in. How'd it get filled in? So then I had, that was like a Thursday night.
Yeah.
Harry was going to come over on Friday, couldn't make it until the following day on Saturday. So he came over with his dog, which the dog did an alert out by the tree, but it was a real mild one, but it wasn't in the same spot. It was about 3 feet away.
From where you had dug?
Right, from where I had dug. It did it.
Ken, hold on. We're at the top of the hour. Just stay right where you are. Oh, this is one for the books. One from Oregon. Ken and Sherry, I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM in the nighttime.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from January 25th, 2002.
Learn from us very much. Lord.
Frontier Radio Networks presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired January 25th, 2002.
Over the years, this has to be one of the best or worst, depending on your point of view, I've ever heard. We'll get back to my sort of temporary guest, I guess. That's how it's happening. Ken and Sherry with quite a story about a house in Oregon. Oh my, that house. Stay right where you are.
Coast to Coast AM is happy to announce that our website is now optimized for mobile device users, specifically for the iPhone and Android platforms. Now you'll be able to connect to most of the offerings of the Coast website on your phone in a quick and streamlined fashion. And if you're a Coast insider, you'll have our great subscriber features right on your phone, including the ability to listen to live programs and stream previous shows. No special app is necessary to enjoy our new mobile site. Simply visit coasttocoastam.com on your iPhone or Android browser. Now we take you back to the night of January 25th, 2002, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Well, all right, Ken, we're down to the last week, the last straw, I suppose, in a way, huh? Last straw, the last couple of days there, anyway. Was absolutely the last straw. All right, what happened?
Okay, so Saturday, I had my friend Harry come over with his dog and work the property, you know, and it hit on that one spot by the tree.
Right.
Well, we went and put him in the truck, and we walked through the house, and Harry's got a digital camera, and he took some shots and stuff like that, see if anything happened to come up.
Right.
But he goes, well, tell you what, he goes, why don't we take her down to the basement and see what happens down there.
Take the dog?
Yes.
Uh-huh, okay.
So you go down in this basement, and when you go down these stairs, and you turn right at the bottom, and it opens up. It's an unfinished basement. It's all dirt floor. But somebody put, like, plywood up on the right side that goes down and angles over, making a room, like an old storage room or something.
Right.
And he opened up the door to that and went in there with the dog, and that dog literally turned inside out. It did not want anything to do with that room.
Oh.
I mean, just, I've seen dogs react doing death alerts, and this was like a major one.
Death alert.
Yeah, that's what it's called. And the dog, you know, we took it out and went upstairs, and it took like a week for his dog to calm down from that. He said the last time he's seen the dog like that was when he had it in Turkey at the earthquake.
Did either one of you go back down to that room?
No.
Smart.
And because I've seen my buddy, I've never seen him scared. And we've been in a lot of predicaments when we did search and rescue and stuff, and I know him really well, and he had the look of terror on his face.
That was enough for you?
That was enough for me. So we went up, and we talked for a while. We were going to get together that Saturday night and go out. Get away from the house, you know,
mm-hmm.
Try and calm ourselves down. My kids were at my folks' for the weekend. And so we ended up going out that evening, and when we came back, I ran down to the store because Sherry goes, well, run down to the store, and we need this real quick, and I got something I got to do, and I come back up. She's in the basement.
She's in the basement?
She's in the basement in that room with a shovel and a flashlight going, I'm going to get you.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yes, that was my thought. So I come down there, and she just freaks and goes running out of there. So we talk about this stuff, and, you know, I go, you can't do this, you know, I mean.
You had told her about the room and the dog and all the rest of it.
She was there when it happened.
Oh, she was there, so she knew about all this.
Right, exactly.
So she knew something was in that room or under.
Right, or something's, you know, been there for some time, or that's where the power or whatever it is there that's coming from, or. You know, I don't know, but whatever it is, it's bad. It's pure evil. It's death.
So you find her with a shovel in her hand saying she's going to get it.
Yeah.
God, Ken. So then what?
Well, we go upstairs and we're talking. And it's like, you know, I'm trying to get a level head view of this thing, you know, and it's like, oh, my God, you know, I mean, we got to do something about this, you know. And she says we have to do something because somebody is going to get seriously injured or killed, is what she says.
You know, and it's like, okay, so we go to bed that night. Now, the next morning is when this happens. Well, actually, right after that is when I got upset after we had this talk, and I go, that's it. I go, all right, you, whatever you are, show yourself. I'm tired of this. We're going at it, you know. And I really got upset, and I was walking through the house ranting and raving that I wanted to see whatever it is, show yourself now. Nothing, you know. So we go to bed, get up in the morning, take a shower, go back into the bedroom there. I got the stereo in the rooms playing. Threw my sweats on and my slippers and T-shirt. You know, we're going to go downstairs, and we hear this, you know, what I said last night, this thump, thump. I mean, heavy. I can go up and down the foot or the stairs. I weigh 180 pounds, and I don't even come close to making the sound that this thing was making.
Huh.
And I look at her, and it's like, who's in the house? And so I turn, and I look out the window, because I can, our driveway comes up and wraps around, and there's no cars there or nothing. And the dog's laying by the end of the bed on the floor, and I look at the dog, and the dog's head is just starting to turn sideways as it's looking through the doorway, you know, at what's coming up. And she barks at everything.
And there's something big coming up.
There's something coming up, and she's not saying a word, just her head's just turning. And so I step over, and Sherry steps over, and here it comes up the stair, you know, whatever it is, it's pure black, as black can be. I mean, I've got a black snap-on jacket, and it was as black as that.
What kind of shape? Like a shape like a human again, small?
No, this is big. This like
is big.
6 foot two.
Oh.
Bigger than me. I'm 5'8" and a half, and I'm looking up at this thing, and it's got this enormous head, and then this body. But you can't see, like, arms or legs, but you can make out the shape of this enormous head that comes down. And then this body comes out from it that goes down to the floor, but doesn't touch the floor.
Oh, my God.
And it's like its head's tipped down, like it's looking at the floor where it's going. And it comes, gets up like the stairs in, and you know, and you got to where the platform goes all the way around that you walk on. And it just starts rotating towards me as it, you know, rotates to the right. And I'm standing there looking at this thing.
Not on feet, though, just rotating in
Yeah, just rotating.
In the air.
Yeah. And I'm looking at the dog, and the dog's looking at it, and it's like, you know, the dog's saying, like, well, screw me, you know. And Sherry just drops to her knees, and I just, there's just, the thought going through my mind is, if this thing looks up, I'm done. I'm dead. This thing is coming. This is, has an agenda. It is right now. It is decided that it is going to do some damage. And it starts coming towards us. And it's just like, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Alien, where there's a part in the film where it comes at the one girl in the spaceship, and it's just like in slow motion. As it comes to her, she's just freaked out. That's the way this thing was coming, you know, like there was nothing I could do, and it was going to have me. And as it came towards me, it got just about to the door, and it just turned to the right and was a blur, gone, blink. And she just screams out, did you see that? And I'm like, hell yes, did you see the size of the head on this thing? And I run to the door, and I look out expecting to see this thing right there, but there's nothing. All the doors are shut, you know, there's no light in the hallway except for the light that's coming from our room, which is just a light through the windows.
You know, I'm just speculating, Ken, but it sounds like when your wife was downstairs with that shovel in that room, it knew it had been found.
Yeah.
Do you think that could be right?
I very well think that could be right, and whatever is there does not want to be disturbed.
I wouldn't disturb it for anything. One more time, if you don't mind, may I speak to Sherry?
Sure.
Okay. Appreciate that.
Hello.
Hi, Sherry.
Hi.
Everything he said so far correct?
Absolutely.
Sherry, could you tell me what took you down to that room with a shovel in your hand? Can you remember what went through your head to get there?
Yes. I was so fed up with all the stress of it, and I just wanted it to be gone. And I believe that whatever was in the house was probably buried down there. Because of the way the dog acted.
Right.
This dog is like 99% on. And
so you were fed up.
I was fed up. I wanted released from it. And I didn't care what it took to get rid of it.
You were going
to
dig it up.
I was going to dig it up. The only thing is that there's concrete under that gravel.
and the shovel wouldn't go through it. So
you were trying when Ken came down?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Wow. Sherry, the being that Ken just described that came up the steps.
Uh-huh. That's exactly what I saw. We've drawn pictures of it, and that's exactly what we saw. And it was so unusual. I was so happy because it's shown itself to me before, but it's never shown it to two people at the same time.
So it was a relief to you that he finally saw it?
Saw it. He was no longer a skeptic.
All right, I sort of wanted to understand what was going through your mind that took you down there with a shovel. That's pretty radical stuff.
Oh, I know. But if you'd been through all that, you would have probably done the same thing.
All right, I agree. Thanks for talking to me, Sherry, and put Ken on one last time.
Okay.
Hello?
Okay, so at this point, now you've both seen this thing. Your skepticism, obviously, is long gone.
Oh, yeah, that already made it out of the house.
So at what point did you two say, that's it? That must have been the point.
Well, this is... Anyway, that was later, well, actually the next day, or later that night, that was it. Because I look out there, and there was nothing there, and I turn around, and she's backpedaling towards the windows, you know,
right,
trying to find some security, get her back up against something, and I, you know, run in there, and I grab her, come on, and I look out the door, and it's clear still, and it's like, come on, Chewie, and down the stairs we went, and we ran out of the house. So we're standing out there in the driveway, just trembling, shaking, and I'm like, oh, my wallet and my keys are on the dresser in the bedroom. Great. You know, that means I got to go back in the house.
Yeah.
So we just kind of hung out there for a little bit and went back in. And normal. It was like nothing going on, you know.
There were photographs taken, and you've got a photograph of some kind of creature, don't you?
Yes, I have. There's several in the picture.
Several?
Yes, there's... Yeah, there's several that look like monsters, and then there's a couple that look like demons, and a human-looking guy that's looking over, looks like a tombstone.
A tombstone. In order to get me these photographs, you don't have a scanner on your computer?
I don't here at home, no. I have to go to a friend's.
So you could go to a friend's and get these scanned and send them to me?
Yes, I could.
You're the hell out of that house now. Although you may not be done with this thing or it with you, I guess.
Right, right. We've had some episodes since we've left there.
Do you want an investigation? Do you want it sounds to me like some sort of college or a paranormal investigation team should be in that house, or maybe not, maybe with you, but certainly somebody should go look at that little storage area in the dirt basement.
Yeah, that's the whole thing, you know. Since we left the house, it kind of made it to where the landlord's kind of back in control, you know. And he doesn't really believe us.
He doesn't believe you?
No, no.
And yet he probably knows the history of somebody else who's run out of that house a long time ago, right?
Exactly.
And still well, of course, I guess the landlord probably wouldn't want to. Do you know whether anybody new is there now?
No. Right now he's in the process of laying new carpet and painting. And in fact, I have to go there tomorrow. I still have a two-car garage that's set off from the house there that I have a bunch of parts in and a couple cars to move. Because we left the house 2 weeks before Thanksgiving, and we're just now getting to the end of getting stuff from there. That's how bad it was.
My God.
To go back there, that night after we'd seen it, and I took the photos that night because there was just this ball activity of, like, little plasma balls and stuff going through the house.
Right.
And we went to bed that night, and the activity moved from downstairs up to our room. And Sherry went to sleep at, like, 11:30, and I laid there till 3:30 watching this stuff. And I go, I got to go to sleep. And I'm looking, it's like, oh, almost 4 o'clock, because I got to get up and go to work. So I lay in there on my side, and I close my eyes, and the next thing I know, the comforter is just sucked around me, and I'm rolled over flat on my back like I'm in a mummy bag, you know, one of them zip-up sleeping bags that you can't hardly move in.
Right.
And I don't know what it is because I can't see it. It's on top of me, and it's pushing all the air out of my lungs. and to where I can't breathe, and I'm struggling, and I say Sherry's name, and like, Sherry, but as hard as I can, trying to get her name out, and, you know, I'm trying to look at her, and she opens up her eyes, and she looks, and I said her name again, and she kind of looks at me like, what? You know, and I was able to say it one more time, and she sat up, and then it quit.
This thing was trying to kill you.
That's what I think. I felt like it was, like, partially into my body. It was pushing me down in the mattress. I mean, I was being pushed into the mattress. And, like, it was trying to suffocate me or kill me. Right there, she would have woke up in the morning and thought I died in my sleep.
So, in your opinion, the landlord wouldn't have a thing to do with any sort of investigation of this house?
I really highly doubt it.
Do you feel like you should be talking to the people who are going to next rent it and warning them?
I very well probably will. You know, we've discussed this, that could end us in some type of lawsuit or something like that, but...
You're right.
To have somebody go through what we went through, I don't want to see that, because whatever is there is evil.
How convinced are you that whatever it is may have followed you and be with you now?
Because when we moved from there to the other house we were at, we had several incidents that happened there, and... then it managed to calm down, and we got the house that we're in now, and we had been moving stuff in here. My kids were staying the night at their friend's house over by the old place, and we were here alone the first night alone in the house here, and we'd went to bed, and like Sherry had told you earlier, was laying there in bed, and she like literally jumped on top of me, you know. She goes, I'm scared. And I hear this, this echoing, like, kind of in a dimension, but not the one that we're in, like in a tunnel, you know, like if somebody off in the distance,
yeah,
going from the bed out the doorway of the bedroom. And I just thought, like, you bastard, you know, here's this evil laugh, like, I found you.
Yeah.
You know, guess what? But that's the last thing that's happened here. It's really odd. And, yeah, we've been going to church every week, and, you know,
This is one last question I want to ask,
okay.
And, again, you don't have to answer it, but have either one of you considered the possibility that whatever this is coming from one of you?
You know, we were thinking about that, but neither one of us ever had any experiences like this until being in that house, ever.
Hi, have you talked to any other media about this?
No, I have not, other than the one guy that he's wrote 4 books, and he gave me a lot of really good information that's really helped to protect us.
But you haven't done any other interviews until now?
No.
Okay. What I want to do is stay in touch with you and Sherry, and I want to know how this comes out, all right?
Yes, I would be happy to let you know how it comes out. And
I hope well, and I wish you both well.
I'll get those pictures back to you. You can study those for a while.
And put them on the website with your permission.
Okay, we'll discuss that.
All right.
All righty.
Ken, thank you.
Thank you. You have a nice night.
Say goodnight to Sherry. Aye. Okay. Onward. Monsters, the subject for tonight. And I guess that was a pretty good warm-up, wasn't it? From the High Desert, I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from January 25th, 2002. listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from January 25th, 2002.
You know, in my opinion, from what you just heard, that's as bad as it gets. And I mean that's as bad as it gets. And I understand the inclination of people to say, look here, something like that happened to me. I've been gone out of there so long before that, your head had been spinning. But in real life, it doesn't always work out that way. You've rented a place, you've got money down, you don't have a lot of money to spare, you've got a job, got a wife and children to take care of. You just don't easily jump, especially when you are skeptical. But boy, that went on for an awful long time, didn't it? Pretty freaky stuff, but then again, that's what this is the home of. Stay right there.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from January 25th, 2002.
That was strange. Does that qualify as a monster? Well, maybe. Ghost, monster. Sounded like a monster, didn't it? So, you know, I thought I would ask you about monsters. Anybody who's encountered monsters, and I sure did get a good start there. That was the last, he was actually the last caller on last night's program. He didn't give that kind of detail. Just one more item, and then we go to open lines. In 1966, Art, I passed through a pickup. I was riding a Honda 305 touring bike. This happened in front of a Catholic church just after Mass when the congregation was loitering outside 50 feet away. The event, in fact, was witnessed by almost the entire church, Nashville, Arkansas, including a local newspaper editor. The miracle did not, however, appear in the paper. Huh. He passed through a pickup. In other words, you can't believe how many emails I've had since we had this call, I don't know when it was, some nights ago, from a man who was in an obvious fatal accident. In other words, that instant when you know you've blown a stop sign at high speed, you see the other car directly in your path, and you know you're dead. Only you're not dead. Because you pass somehow right through the vehicle in your path. A lot of emails like that, like this one. An entire church congregation saw it happen. East of the Rockies, you are on the air. Thank you for waiting.
Hi, Art.
Hi. Where are you?
Chicago Ridge, Illinois.
Yes, sir.
My name is Doug.
Yes, Doug.
I got a story for you. It's freaked me out all these years.
Okay.
All right, about 7 years ago, I was sleeping alone in bed, and I wake up, and there's three hooded monks at the foot of my bed.
Why would you say monks?
Because it looked like they had monks' outfits on. Now, this is a two-part story. It just looked that way. I mean, it was about an hour before sunrise, so, and my drapes were closed, though.
Hey, they were hooded.
Yeah.
Okay. Did they have discernible shapes for faces and arms and legs?
Well, it just looked like they. Well, I saw. All right. It looked like they had. It looked like hooded monks. That's the best way to describe them.
Okay.
So I sit up in my bed and I look at them. They look at each other, then they look back at me.
Mm-hmm.
I jump out of bed. I run in my hallway. I'm heading for my living room. And I look to my left, and there's two more of these things.
Huh.
In my other bedroom, didn't look at me. They're looking around at my stuff in my bedroom.
Holy moly.
All right, this is the first part, so I'm freaking out.
At least.
I run in my living room. I get out of eyesight, and my heart's pounding. And, I don't know. I'm thinking they're going to come around the corner.
Uh-huh.
So I'm there for a couple minutes. I go back, I look, peek around the corner, they're gone. About 3 days later, it's about the same time, about an hour before sunrise, I'm sound asleep again, and I wake up, and there's someone illuminated in white light standing on the side of my bed. The left side of my bed. And my bed was against the wall. There shouldn't have been enough room for him to stand there. So I go to jump out of bed, and something slams me back on the bed. I'm on my knees on the bed, and I'm about a foot and a half away from this thing. And something starts guiding my eyes. My eyes go up the up his body, from like the thigh up.
Right.
Going up the center of his body. And he was wearing like a white cassock, I think it's called. I wore it when I was an altar boy. I go up, it gets to his chest, and my eyes start going down to his right side, because his arms were held out. So my eyes are going down his left arm. And right before I would have got to see his hand, it let me go, or I don't know what happened, but I ran. I end up jumping out of bed and running.
Logical reaction.
Yeah. And again, I'm freaking out. So now I don't sleep with the drapes closed anymore.
You think it had something to do with the drapes being closed?
Well, I think one other time I did sleep with my drapes closed, and I saw a ghost, an old woman.
Any idea where these drapes came from?
From the apartment. They were left here. And they are freaky looking. I don't think it's the drapes, but... I mean, it freaks me out to this day what it meant.
Do you have any thoughts on what it all meant?
Well, after it happened, I'm thinking, well, maybe my soul could go either way. You know?
Your soul?
My soul.
Maybe they were there looking around for your soul.
No, I don't know. I don't know. I'm glad the white figure came second than first.
It's a good point. I guess. I mean, whatever comforts you.
Yeah.
Thanks for the story.
Thanks, Art.
Yeah, take care. Figures his soul could go either way, but comforted by the fact that the guy in white came second, not first. Five little guys in black looking around your apartment, first staring at you and then obviously ransacking or looking around your apartment. West of the Rockies, you are on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Hello.
Yeah, this is Chuck in Fairbanks, Alaska.
Hi, Chuck.
And I listen to you at night. I carve fossilized ivory and bone, and I also deal in fossils.
Oh.
And I had a customer who I sold a very, very rare fossil to. It was a bear, and it was a huge monster bear. And last summer he called and he said, look, I got this film crew from England. And they're flying up, and they want to take pictures of where this bear is. And I showed them around a little bit, and we went to some mines. I took them in an underground mine where there's a mammoth skull. And just to make a long story short, it was real interesting. These are some premier videographers on documentaries and medical things. And they called me a few weeks later, and they says, look, we're looking for some, and I really didn't even know what this is all about, but we're looking for some meat that is anywhere from 100 to, 500, 1,000 years old.
Now, why would anybody want that?
Well, evidently, this hasn't come out yet. And you mentioned a little bit about this, these cells that they're getting out of bones.
Human stem cells that would appear to be able to reproduce every single organ in your body.
This is another scientist on the East Coast that's doing the same thing. It's along the same lines, and I had never heard of them before. These guys that were doing the video wouldn't tell me anything about it, but my friend, the collector, said they're calling them spore cells, and they're extremely microscopic.
So what do you think they were trying to do, reproduce this?
Well, here's what I found out later is they can take these spore cells, and they can cultivate them and actually grow them. And they're doing this documentary, and my collector friend said the guy's going to get a Nobel Prize. Well, it sounds to me like from what you said in the news tonight, there are other people working on the same thing. They're these spore cells. Well, I said, I go out to the villages and buy ivory from the Eskimos, and I sent a flyer out to this village out in the middle of Bering Sea where people have lived for over 2,000 years, and I put something on the board that said reward for ancient old meat caches and
frozen flesh,
frozen meat,
yeah.
And it was really a fascinating experience. I hadn't been out there in years and years, and these Siberian Yupik Eskimos have lived there for over 2,000 years. Well, when they hunt the walrus in the spring, they bury the meat. They take a big piece of the hide off and they wrap the meat up in it. And they bury it in these holes that are sometimes 15 feet deep. It's like a refrigerator.
So in other words, they, from time to time, might come on a stash, a very ancient stash.
Right. Well, on this same island, they also dig for these artifacts. And when they're digging in these old village sites, they find these meatballs. And this guy called me, and I said, yeah. And he says, I've got two or three of these. I know where they're at, and I can dig them up for you. So I went out and videoed it, and I got two of these ancient meatballs.
Meatballs, you call them?
Yeah, they're meatballs. These are chunks of walrus meat, and it's wrapped up in walrus hide. And it looked to me like a mummy, but it was heavy and very frozen. You could tell it.
How are you able to tell the age? How do you discern
it? Well, the way we could tell, and I got a video of all this. You know, I took a video camera, and I videoed the guy pulling this out of the hole. We went. The village, like I say, is 2,000 years old, and we went to the oldest, this came out of one of the oldest sites of the village where these people hadn't lived or anybody had anything to do with it for, you know, like 500 years. And the ground is, as you know, up here is permanently frozen.
Yes.
And, they just work all summer like chipping concrete to get these artifacts out. And it's some of the most incredible artifacts. Some of them are worth tens of thousands of dollars. This ancient civilization was one of the most sophisticated in North America.
So you think you dug up this ancient meat to be reproduced?
Well, I called the lady.
Oh, my God.
And when I got back, I sent I FedExed this. I put it on dry ice, and I sent it to this. The guy that's doing the research, I'm not going to mention his name.
No, please don't.
It hasn't come out yet. I could email it to you, and you could maybe get a hold of him. But he... I sent it by FedEx, and she wouldn't tell me a thing about it, but I talked to my friend later, and he said that the meat they were really emphatic about telling me that this meat cannot be thawed. You know, and I got this to the 1st of November, so...
What do you mean, cannot be thawed?
Well, they didn't want it thawed because they didn't want bacteria to contaminate it, and it would be harder for them to get the cell.
Yes, of course.
But I heard... The crew from England came over. I sent it off to them, and the crew from England came over in December and were videoing at this doctor's laboratory. And I emailed them. They wouldn't email me back, and I called my friend.
Can you tell me where this lab was?
It's in Massachusetts.
All right.
Yeah. And
I knew this kind of stuff was going on in labs privately around the world. I knew.
Right. And this guy, you know, I talked to his secretary, and he's a professor, and really what he's involved in, he's a real bigwig professor, and it doesn't sound like this is something he's doing on the side, like you say. It's not a, he's not a full-time researcher.
Uh-huh.
It evidently this guy and his brother are involved in it. And
so
this
was a good money-making venture for you?
Well, I had the time of my life because I carved bone and ivory, and I got some just tons of neat material to work. And I did. I made a couple thousand dollars, and I got some really good contacts. But I got word of mouth from my friend, who is the fossil collector, that the meat had been frozen and thawed, but they were able to inside one of the bones get some of these spore cells and cultivate them. So I just thought it was kind of going along. I tried to call you a couple of times when you were talking about cloning, but
how do you feel about being part of this? I mean,
well, I have real mixed feelings. I don't believe that humans should be cloned. I don't think it's something we need to do. And hopefully, maybe this research.
Well, how about ancient animals, though? I mean, bringing back ancient animals, is that such a good idea?
My life is tied up in carving and dealing in. I'll send you a picture of myself. I've sold probably more mammoth tusks and ivory than anybody in the country. I've sold tens of thousands of pounds of mammoth ivory. And these creatures fascinate me. We're in Fairbanks.
I understand that. And I understand the condition of the ground in Fairbanks, believe me. But I still, should we be they've done movies about this, you know, dinosaurs, remember?
I think it's going to happen. I don't know about humans. I think these they're, you know, the Japanese are working on the mammoths, and there's such an interest in it. It would be, it's going to happen. These new cells that I'm talking about, you were reading about.
Yes, sir.
Are probably the way it will be done, and this stuff hasn't even come out yet. But as far as finding that guy, the Japanese guy that went to Russia and all that, the way they were going about it is not going to work. But they'll come up with a method.
The advisability of bringing into the modern world an ancient animal that really doesn't belong here.
Well,
I don't know about
that. These mammoths were here yesterday. I mean, it was such a short period of time ago.
Well,
there are legends of them. They were
yesterday.
Well,
in years.
Well, the paleontologists say 20,000 years.
Just 20,000
years. But they have found evidence in Russia, like on Wrangel Island, 3,000 years. And there's legends of people that would say that it's been within the last 1,200 years. Some of these things, and there were so many more animals.
I know, but Christ was, just 2002, right?
Yes.
So you're talking about 20,000 years. It was still maybe a blink in cosmic time, but I'm telling you, 20,000 years, evolutionary, and in terms of the world's history as we know it, say since Christ. Gosh, folks. That's a pretty ancient animal in a pretty modern world, and why do I always think something like this is going to go wrong?
Well, it could. It very well could. And, you know, I believe that the reason that these animals aren't here anymore is because of man. And I look at it from a Christian perspective that the earth was designed, and it was so much more complex and beautiful, and because of what man has done to it by not taking care of the environment and not following the rule book, things have gotten the way they are, and we're continuing to lose species, and you know, we're really, really messing things up.
Still, doesn't it slightly give you the heebie-jeebies?
It does, to be honest with you, Art. But
digging, I mean, bones are one thing, but digging up essentially fresh meat from 20,000 years ago and sending it to a scientist in Massachusetts.
I don't know. I do have some mixed feelings, but I think it's fascinating. I believe in the Creator, and I think that it's not going to go any further than he'll put a stop to it. I think I don't know, but yeah, we could talk all night. I had a real interesting experience I'll tell you about here 2 weeks ago. Well, maybe a little longer than that. We have a daughter who we adopted. She's 7, and this really shook me up, but. We came home from church, it was at night, and I ran across the road to check the mail. My wife was sitting in the van, and she started running, a car came flying by, and I screamed, and something that we couldn't see grabbed her by the nape of her neck and jerked her back.
You saw that happen, sir?
Right in front of our eyes, my wife just, this happened, I don't know, it's been a few weeks ago, and it was just, the guy was flying down the road.
And you saw her move as if by a totally unseen force?
Exactly. I've never had anything.
Could you see anything actually pulling on her?
Well, no, but she was jerked backwards. She was running at a full tilt, and something grabbed her from behind and pulled her back.
Oh, my God.
And I honestly believe, like you say, Art, that things are happening at a breakneck pace. My wife says she sees these shadow people in her house. My daughter says she sees the same thing. I've never even thought or heard anything like that. This just happened with you within the last year. There's something going on.
There is something going on.
Yeah.
Something's breaking down. And what happened to your daughter? That was clearly a miracle.
It was a miracle.
All right, sir. Appreciate the call from Fairbanks. Fresh meat, huh? Yikes.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from January 25th, 2002. You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from January 25th, 2002.
Can you imagine barreling down the highway in the middle of a dark Nevada night in a 18-wheeler hearing all this stuff? Man, I'd stop the rig, I'd get on CB, I'd call for company, and I don't think I'd move until I'd heard the last of it. Either that, or I'd switch to music.
Now we take you back to the night of January 25th, 2002, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
All right, once again, into the night and the unknown we go. We're in open lines. We're kind of talking about monsters of all kinds. Randy in Keithville, Louisiana, writes, these ancient animals, the ones we were talking about a moment ago, these ancient animals are dead for a reason. And what kind of diseases are these scientists going to release upon us that lived 20,000 years ago and killed these animals off? Has anybody thought about any of this? It's wrong, it's bad, and it's dangerous. And I do know they're doing it, too. They all died. And hasn't it occurred to anybody out there that there must have been a good reason why they died? And I'm not sure if we really want to find out, but I guess we're going to, aren't we? East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Art.
Yes.
I'm just thankful just to be able to talk to you about this, because I never knew about Art Bell. And there's two things that I've always wanted to talk to you about. The first thing is, I have no recollection of what had, from a past experience, moving into a house the first time as a child at 5 years old. Basically, what I'm getting at is, it was like I was in a dream state, but I was awake.
Your family moved you into a new house.
In a new house.
Uh-huh.
And what I remember from this new house, I can remember the interior of it. I cannot remember the exterior, but I remember the things that were the most scariest things that I have ever witnessed in my life.
In that house?
In that house.
Like what?
I'm talking things that were fluorescent. They looked moldy, in a sense. They were there were snakes in the house.
Snakes. And now, were you the only one seeing these, or were your parents seeing these?
I was the only one.
You were the only one.
Right. And I've had dreams continuously throughout my life, not on a everyday basis, but I'm saying like maybe once or twice a year of the same house as the child that I was experiencing them at the time. And and I was in an awake state.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you're yet to move into this house yourself. Maybe these are precognitive dreams.
I'm not really sure, but from, you know, becoming...
Something's going to come full circle for you.
Full?
Full circle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I appreciate the story, sir. Thank you. I don't know what to tell you. That's one you can put down to a young child's imagination. Trouble is, he's had these dreams as he's grown up. Sounds precognitive to me. Don't mean to worry you, sir. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Yes, sir.
This is Dan in Idaho Falls.
Yes, Dan.
I wanted to talk about the dangers of Passover of a monster comet.
A monster, well, that would be a monster of a kind, a monster
yeah.
comet. How close is this comet?
It overflies Earth tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
From South Pole to the North Pole.
Do you mean, now wait a minute, do you mean tomorrow as in today, after midnight today, or do you mean tomorrow,
yes,
tomorrow?
After midnight.
So, this day, then?
Yes.
Oh, great. How do you know about this monster comet?
Well, I discovered it more than 3 years ago, and I gave the course.
Well, if it's as close as you say it is, shouldn't the major astronomical observatories around the world be seeing it like crazy right now?
You see, this comet was altered. The course was altered by the U.S. government. And apparently they're going to be secret about it. But I wanted to talk about the dangers that we're going to experience tomorrow.
And those are what?
Planetary lightning bolts and a tremendous electrical storm. Don't you got a 100-foot tower?
Yes,
there?
I do, yes.
Ooh.
Hmm.
Smoking.
Just great. Planetary lightning bolts.
Yeah. Everybody should be tuned to NOAA Weather Alert, because you're not going to see the comet. It's going to go by in minutes, and people who see it are going to be in mid-Pacific.
Do you have any idea about what time?
You're in the Mountain Standard Time?
No, I'm Pacific.
Pacific. That would be 6:57 p.m.
6:57
p.m. That's when it crosses the equator.
Uh-huh. And as this comet passes, there are going to be incredible disturbances, you say, to our atmosphere?
Yeah. Electrical lightning storms. And you want to disconnect your electrical power at the main when it starts.
Well, thanks for the warning. I'm going to really feel extremely stupid if I don't pay attention to that man, and it happens. Yes, I've got a tower. And another tower here in town, the radio station, and enough electronics to make up my own war room, you know, if I wanted to rewire it all. So, if we are about to have a gigantic comet pass and massive electrical storms in our atmosphere later today, well, I guess this will be my last chat with you if that comes true, huh? Because it's going to fry all my broadcast equipment, my uplink, and all the stuff at the end of the dish, you know, that the head that transmits to the satellite, and God knows what it's going to do to the satellite, so what chance do I have? First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Art?
Yes.
Hi, this is Jason from Syracuse, New York.
Yes, Jason.
I've been trying to call you for months. We've actually been contacted. It happened east of Phoenix near Canyon Lake, Arizona.
Who has been contacted?
Me and two friends of mine. The Anunnaki actually communicated with us mentally from three spacecrafts, two silver disks, and one large octagonal. It was gigantic. It flew right above our car. And as it was flying right above our car, it stopped and it hovered. It didn't make any sound. And we all felt our minds being lifted. And as our minds were being lifted, we could understand what they were trying to say. And I could actually know what my friends were thinking. And that was like the most mind-boggling thing. I could actually, but...
You were all sharing a mind.
Yeah, that's...
Along with the Anunnaki in the ship hovering over you. And where were you when this occurred, please?
Canyon Lake. It's 50 miles east of Phoenix, Arizona.
And what were you doing out there? Where are you now?
Right now I'm in Syracuse, New York.
Syracuse, so you were out there on vacation or something, or what?
No, I went to college there for a whole semester there.
I see.
In Mesa. And we had gone camping that weekend. And the weekend before, we went out there to swim in Canyon Lake. And we were like, well, let's go back camping and watch the sun come up. Because out there you can see all the stars and stuff.
Oh, it's yes.
Really cool.
Beautiful, yes.
But as they were above us, and our minds were lifted to where we could understand what they were saying. And I could read my friends' minds. And they gave us assignments to complete on Earth.
Like what?
In the year, that's what I'm about to get to. In the year and a half since our first encounter with them, I've somehow been able to channel this like great galactic music force. And so far I've completed 83 galactic songs. And they also let me know that once I was done to get a hold of you, because...
This is beginning to sound like a galactic promo.
A galactic promo?
Yeah, galactic promo. For galactic music.
Well, they're communicating through this music.
No, I understand that. I mean, but that is what you're doing, right?
Well, basically...
A galactic... So you have... All right, galactically, I'm going to suggest that you email me. and I'll listen to some of your galactically channeled music. And if it is sufficiently interesting, I will put it on the air so everybody can hear it. Yes, that was a galactic promo. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning, sir.
This is Kat from near San Francisco.
Yes, sir.
Back in the late 60s, got out of the military, went to work for one of the big companies in the San Francisco area. And I had a bunch of women working for me. 19 of them.
19 women.
Yeah, they were a pretty good crew, like a little family. They were good. They really did really efficient work. Everything was going fine. Added this one new gal, and all of a sudden things started going to hell. Sick leaves went up, and people started making a lot of mistakes. I started getting a little concerned, started really paying attention to my flock.
And you associated this with the addition of the new one?
The only thing that was different.
Okay.
And I watched her, and one day, towards break time, she was kind of wandering around through the work area as if, well, you've seen a dog cutting sheep or cattle out of a herd?
Oh, sure.
She was doing just like that. And she was backing this one gal up, and this gal was really frightened. So I started off in her direction. This gal, you know, that was frightened, she had her hands up, and this other one was reaching for her about the time I got to her. And I turned her around, put my hands on either side of her head.
Yes.
And she had this real funny reaction. She lost all the color out of her face, and her knees buckled. She hit the floor. I told her if she ever did that again, I was going to finish the job. Just after that, a woman from another area came walking up to me. She claimed she was a witch. And she said that this gal that I had just dealt with was a psychic vampire.
A psychic vampire?
I'd never heard of it before.
This is the kind of thing that you get for working with so many women.
Well, it was the first time I ever ran across
it. You've got a psychic vampire, you've got a witch, and that's a pretty small crew to come up with.
In the San Francisco area, you've got a lot of people who...
Well, you've got a point. All right, so she was a psychic vampire, and the witch was helping you out by telling you this.
Well, she was telling me what the story was.
Gotcha.
All right. She apparently was... attempting to deal with it, and apparently, well, hey, this other one was messing with my particular flock, and they were doing good work up until she showed up, so I got angry.
You keep calling them your flock. Well, so she was virtually feeding on your flock.
This is what I was told.
Uh-huh. So what happened?
Well, she left a couple days later. Everything finally settled down and returned back to normal.
I've heard of psychic vampires.
She had a real funny look on her face when she was backing this gal up.
Did the members of your flock have any comment on this woman?
Yeah, they started talking about it afterwards. They started telling myself and a couple other people they were scared of hell of her.
I mean, were their energies depleted? Were they psychically affected in some way?
Their sick records went up enormously after this gal showed up.
And
it was almost as if I had an epidemic on my hands.
Yeah, and your production numbers no doubt fell.
Like a rock.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what to say about that. Anyway, I guess the situation cleared, and it was okay after that.
Yeah. It was a new one on me. I'd never heard of it before. As a matter of fact, I'd never met a witch before in my life, so...
A witch would know.
Yeah?
Believe me, a witch would know. Well, that's an amazing story. You're not employed there any longer.
No, I'm not employed there any longer. Gotten long in the tooth and retired myself.
I see. But that's one to remember, huh?
It's one that I put in a basket that I have labeled, I haven't got the wildest idea what it's all about.
Mm-hmm. Do you often tell people about this?
No.
I appreciate your telling me.
All righty.
You have a good morning.
I shall.
Yeah, that many women. I don't know.
He called them his flock. Psychic vampires. We have done a little bit of talk about psychic vampires in the past. They're an interesting group, and they do appear to be real. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hi, Art. My name's Doug. I live in Bozeman, Montana.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I have a... It's kind of crazy calling in, actually, just because I always consider myself a fan of yours, but I never thought that anything strange would ever happen to me. My wife and I recently moved into a house, I'd say about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a lot of weird things that happen in it. Anywhere from late at night, I come home from work. I worked a graveyard shift, and laying on the couch, kind of getting ready for bed.
Sure.
And knocking at the rear glass door, and I'm actually a police officer, so...
Oh, you are?
I am. So, it worried me a little bit, of course, and I'd come home and put my gun belt on the table, and thought right away of that, and of
getting
course,
your gun, sure, of course.
Well, yeah, and it was near the sliding glass door, and so I quickly got up, rounded the corner, and grabbed that, you know, because we also bring our own police vehicles home. So.
How long have you been a police officer?
Oh, about 5 years, I guess.
5 years? You on patrol duty?
I am, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I was actually a border patrol agent before that, too.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, so things like that, no one there. I searched around, couldn't find anything. Stereo turns on a lot on its own. I don't know, this place is crazy. And you know, listening to you talk to the guy earlier about having other concerns about, you know, not moving out of the house because of monetary reasons. Or,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, and nothing bad has happened. We found our good pots and pans laying in the middle of the garage cement floor.
But you see, if you listen to his story, it started out with the kind of things that you're describing.
Right.
But it progressed. Now,
sure.
I don't know at what point, you know, you say, enough, I'm the hell out of here.
Yeah. Well, luckily enough, actually, I guess we're probably moving for good or bad. You know, it has nothing to do with the house. I have another job opportunity somewhere else.
If something 7 or 8 feet tall, black, and obviously not exactly human as we understand it, were to begin approaching you and you had a gun,
right,
what would you do?
Well, I think I would shoot it. I wouldn't know what to do. I deal in the human realm all the time, of course, and if I didn't think it was human, I wouldn't know what to do, honestly. I'd be a little intimidated. We have, you know, I kind of laugh about it because I myself am not super convinced as to what's going on. The knock at the door was the weirdest because, the second weirdest, just because of the fact that I was right there and I looked around. I'm thinking some joker was playing a trick on me, you know, knows I'm a cop or whatever.
Yeah.
But no one was there, and they couldn't have gotten away that quickly. I would
think people would be disinclined to play pranks on people they know have guns. You know, that just...
I never put anything past anyone. They just, you know, nothing surprises me. Well, I did wake up one afternoon with scratch marks on my back, too.
Scratch marks?
Yeah, that kind of worried me. I was a little bit reluctant to show my wife because, of course, she hadn't placed them there.
I understand. She might be concerned about who did. Officer, listen, I've got to scoot because we're at a break point here.
Yeah, well, thank you very much.
Find a new place to live.
Yeah, I'll try my best.
All right, see ya.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from January 25th, 2002. I'm ready. Whoa, 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 I'm ready. Premier Radio Networks presents Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired January 25th, 2002.
Tonight's program may come under the category of be very, very careful what you ask for. I thought we'd talk just a little bit about monsters, but it's gotten way out of control. I mean, way out of control. This is freaky stuff, and we'll be right back.
Now we take you back to the night of January 25th, 2002, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
The next caller, I actually know the name of. He's Jay in Akron, Ohio, and he just fast-blasted me the following. Got a weird story for you. I hit a UFO with my car. If you'd like to chat with me about it, call so-and-so, and I've got the number, and actually, I've got Jay on the line. Hello there, Jay.
Hi, Art.
How you doing? Yeah, I hear you fine.
I'm doing okay.
You're in Ohio, huh?
Yeah, I live in Akron.
Yes, sir.
I'm listening to you on WTAM.
What happened to you?
Well, this happened about, I think 99, summer of 99. I was driving home from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Right.
And I was on Interstate 76, heading westbound.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about 3 o'clock in the morning. I was visiting friends and just heading home. And at night on the freeway, you know, there's hardly any cars, maybe just a couple rigs driving by. And I come around the corner. I was doing probably about 70 miles an hour.
Were you in a car or a truck?
Yeah, I was in my car. I drove a Nissan.
All right.
And I had just come around the corner, and there was a rig off to the side of the road, and when I drove by him, I mean, he was just sitting there, and when I drove by him, he blew his truck horn in, you know, which I thought was kind of strange, so I looked back, and I just saw him, like, you know, just burr, and he made the sound, and I looked around, and I'm like, oh, this is weird, I don't know what he's doing, you know, and I looked ahead, and all of a sudden, in the middle of the road was I just saw the black outline of it, and it looked just like the thing that, I forget his name, that guy that found a UFO in, I think it was Washington, and the alien attacked him.
Dr. Reed.
Yeah, it was shaped like that.
Are you talking about the what he called the obelisk?
Yeah, it was shaped like the obelisk.
So that trucker that blew the horn was really trying to warn you, wasn't he?
I don't know. I have no idea why he was sitting there.
Well, if he was stopped, then I would conclude that he saw whatever it was in the road.
Yeah, but the way he blew his horn, it made me turn around and look at him, and I was like, what the hell's going on, you know?
Uh-huh.
And then I looked and I saw it. And it was floating in the middle of the highway.
Just floating.
Just right there in the middle of the highway. My headlights hit it, but what was weird is, like, the light didn't really reflect off of it. It just kind of, like, absorbed it almost. Like, it wasn't even made of metal. You know?
Uh-huh.
My car came right underneath it, and when it did, top half of my windshield hit it. And I had spun out on the road, and I landed in the median. And when I looked around, it was gone.
It was gone.
And, yeah. But the truck was still there. The truck was sitting, I saw his headlights and everything. And I got stuck. And I tried to back out, and I couldn't do it. And I had to get out of my car, and he just left. He started to roll away, and he drove right past me and just kept on going. And I'm sitting there in the middle of the road like, what the hell? But I looked at my windshield, and the only damage to my car was the windshield was cracked.
Yes.
So about 10 minutes later, another car came down the road, and I waved him over. You know, I told him I ran off the road. I didn't tell him about the UFO or anything I hit. And he helped me get my car out of there. And the only other damage to my car was I had ripped a metal shield it's like a heat shield off the top of my exhaust pipe. And that was the only other damage to my car besides the crack in my windshield.
Oh, that's odd.
Yeah,
the whole thing is odd. What do you think you hit?
I have no idea, but I've been trying to call you, I don't know, for the past couple months, but now I kind of forgot about calling you, and then you guys were talking about things in the middle of the road and all that stuff. So I decided to, you know, fax blast you to see if you could, you know, get a hold of me or whatever.
Well, I did, and I appreciate your story. I don't know, I don't even begin to know how to diagnose what happened to you.
Yeah, it was pretty weird. I mean, but
you're sure of one thing. You're sure that whatever it was
uh-huh.
was just hovering. there.
I was just hovering right in the middle of the road, and I hit it at about 70 miles an hour. And, I mean, I don't even know if I damaged it or whatever. All I remember is this big plunk, and I ducked my head, and next thing I know, I'm off in the ditch. And
that's incredible.
And I turned around, you know, looking around. I couldn't really see much. I just saw a truck off in the distance. And I think it was gone because I got out of my car. I didn't see anything.
He probably didn't want anything to do with any of it.
But I'm standing there looking at him, and he just drives away. He just pulls away, and, you know, it was like one of those, I forget what kind of trucking company it is. I probably shouldn't even mention it.
No, don't, please. But it's it's not necessary. You know, it's human nature. I mean, I really think the guy probably had seen this and was stopped looking at it and was trying to warn you.
Unless he hit it, too, or something. I have no idea. It was just weird. It was a weird occasion.
weird Ohio, weird Pennsylvania. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Thanks.
Take care. All right. There you go. For what it's worth. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Warren?
Yes.
Yes. My name is Albert, and I'm calling from California.
Yes, sir.
And my story is this. I'll try to make it short. Routinely, in a previous house that I was living in, it was a rented house, we had a separate garage from the house, and I would operate a ham shack out of the garage, as well as I had a workbench where I would put together printed circuit boards.
Well, you're a ham. You're a ham.
Yeah.
Okay.
Finally, I spent a lot of evening hours inside that shed, and, you know, nothing unusual happened other than, you know, just listen to you on the radio. But one night, I was working on a circuit board, and then all of a sudden, I start hearing like a crunching sound on top of the garage roof.
Crunching?
And, yes, like somebody really heavy weight walking on top of the roof.
Uh-huh.
And since I have, I had set up a lot of antennas on top of the roof for different frequencies.
I hear you. It's like, oh my God, my antennas.
Exactly. Either my antennas or somebody was out there to do something to them, you know? So immediately I opened up, I had a mag light, you know, one of these big flashlights, and I walked outside the back side of the garage and shined the light up on top of the roof.
Right.
And what I saw, Art, is something that was so incredible that to this day I'm still freaked out over it. I can't understand what I saw, but basically it comes in line with what you guys have been talking about. It was like a black figure. It was tall. This thing was tall. It was at least 6.5 feet tall. And it was totally black. It seemed like it just was a figure of a person, but not quite. And again, the same thing, like almost like it had reddish eyes.
Oh.
And it just stood there and stared back at me. And I said, God, this must be somebody wearing a disguise or something, you know?
Right. The mind tries to make it into something we understand.
Yeah, and then I said to myself, I'm going to catch this sucker because I'm not going to allow him to you know, be on top of my roof. You
screw
know?
With my antennas.
Exactly. So, you know, it stood there for a moment, and it was stunned, and it was just staring back at me, and then it turned towards the left and walked towards the edge of the roof, hopped off, and this, it's not an easy jump, you know, but it hopped off, and I could hear it hit the ground, and I went out towards the front of the garage, and by the time I made it to the front, it was gone. Nowhere to be found.
What about footprints?
No footprints.
What about damage to your antennas?
Nothing at all. Nothing at all. And I still can't explain what it was, but it just was something that I've never experienced before in my life. It just left me stunned.
You operate on the low bands?
I operate on basically 2 meters and 440.
Running a lot of power?
No, not much.
Not much, no. Yeah, just kidding with you. All right, well, listen, I appreciate the story. You have any afterthoughts on what you saw, what that was?
No, but I had another phenomenon happen in the same house to where we eventually just moved out of the place, but God, that was the most scariest one of all.
Uh huh. Well, it did it for me. Thank you very much. I can only imagine. Of course, everything I own has antennas growing from it. You know, my house, all my cars, and The RV, oh, the RV has a lot of antennas growing from it, and if anything were crunching on my roof, I would react exactly as he did. Maybe. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Yes, hi.
This is David, WGE 1360, Green Bay.
Yes, sir.
Last night I heard you talking about the Mothman, and I heard you make mention of a bat showing up on your porch after your father's passing.
It certainly did happen, yes.
Okay, I have something similar that happened. Our family, well, the last three generations have been in one house, and I'm 51 now. In 1996, in 1995, my mother became ill, and she became so ill that my younger brother and I moved in with her to care for her. In September of 96, on my daughter's 16th birthday, my mother passed away.
I'm sorry.
Thank you. About a month later, sometime in October, I worked nights and my brother worked early in the morning. I came home from work and I went into the house. My mother had been dead for about a month, and my brother was in the kitchen making coffee, and I said hi to him, went upstairs, turned the hall light on, and went upstairs, and down the hall on the left was my bedroom, and on the right was her old bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
Both bedroom doors were open. The hall light was shining into both. I turned right into my bedroom, clicked on the light, changed into my house clothes, and came out into the hall. I clicked off my bedroom light, came out into the hall. And as I passed by my mother's open bedroom doorway, my shadow went past her bed, but it was not in sync with my body. It seemed to move either slower or faster. I can't remember which now. And I thought, wow, that's odd. And I took a step back, and the hall light, you know, was shining on, you know, behind me, kind of going into her room.
Sort of testing your own shadow again.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was, again, not in sync, so I just stopped and I looked. And I could see this little black shadow flitting around. And I realized, a bat.
Oh.
In my mother's old bedroom.
Oh.
And I was so flipped, I could not reach out and touch that doorknob to shut the door. I went downstairs. I said to Allie, my brother, I said, Allie, there is a bat up in Mama's old bedroom. And he goes, what? And I said, there's a bat up there. And I told him I wasn't going to go up there, so he got on. My brother loves animals. He's not afraid of them. He got these pair of leather gloves on.
Uh-huh.
And got a sack.
And he's going to go catch the bat.
Yes, he did. He brought it downstairs about 5-10 minutes later. I was sitting at the kitchen table, ramrod upright. I mean, I wasn't moving. He said, I'm going to release it out into the backyard. My brother loves animals. He said, come on along. I said, there's no way. And he said, well, it's more afraid of you are than of it. That's an old wives' tale about them landing in your hair, which I knew. I went out there, he tipped the bag over. I was standing back about 15 feet. Well, first it was upright.
Mm.
The bat wouldn't leave. Then he tipped the bag over in the grass. And the bat, I guess it's got little claws on its wings or something.
Mm-hmm.
He was telling me you have to be really careful of them because their bones are so fragile, you'll break them.
Right.
So it climbed out of the bag and into the grass. And it made a couple of swoops around the yard. I remember ducking. And it just kind of went north into these other neighbors' backyards and disappeared. And the thing is, when I heard you talk about your father and the bat, I just about fell out of my chair. I had to call you up and tell you this. And I just, my mother was such a good person. If this had happened before she had died, I think, well, it was somewhat portentous. But this was like a month afterwards, and
I don't know if it would be a connection or not. I, you know, who knows about these things. I appreciate the story. It was an odd story. My father, as you probably know, had cancer and was in the final stages of that cancer, and I had booked a flight to be leaving that day, as a matter of fact, to go be with him. I don't know if you all knew this or not, and I was booked on a flight that day, and I got a call in the middle of the night saying my father had passed away, had had a heart attack, and they thought it was quite merciful as opposed to going through the end stages, the very end stages of cancer. You know, he just had a heart attack and suddenly passed away. And that morning, that same morning, something really, really, really strange happened. I mean, it just doesn't happen. It's never happened before nor since. We went out to the porch, and there on our porch was a bat. This is in the summer, here in the desert. Here was a bat on our porch, just sitting there. We thought it was dead, but it wasn't dead. We thought it was sick, but it wasn't even apparently sick. So my wife scooped up the bat, and we took the bat into the causeway, where there was shade, because, you know, it gets very hot here in the summer. The desert, very hot. And the bat just remained in the causeway. And when we got up, much later, after dark, the bat was just gone. That bat stayed here all day. It just stayed the day. It was odd. It was really odd. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah. First, I was over at my friend's house about 2 years ago. I was about 15 then. He is petrified going into the woods behind his house after dark. And now I know for good reason. We were going back there, right? I like hiking, and I like, especially like going out during the night.
Right.
Okay. Well, he goes to put the flashlight down to tie his shoe. I see something kind of palish, about 3 feet tall, scamper in front of light, and down this hill, it's 80 degrees. About 50 feet down.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, I'm like, you know, get up, what was that? He's like, I've seen that before, you know, that's why I don't want to come out here, let's go back.
What exactly did you see?
He's telling me it's a monster, I'm just, you know, or something that's back there. I just think it's his little brother or something. You know, he is convinced, though. And his little, of course, I know it's not his little brother, because, you know, he was out for the night at his friend's house, you know. And now, I've, you know, he's had bad dreams about it. Because, you know, it's in his backyard. And then I have a second story. My grandma's house, she's been renting it. Before she died, she rented it out.
Right.
This is in Detroit, right?
Yes.
So, you know, old murder capital of the world. Person got murdered there. My cousins are messing around with the Ouija board because they live there now. You know, one night we're messing around with it. I fall asleep because I...
You know, wait a minute. Let's back up here a little bit.
Yeah.
Let's consider the wisdom of you're in Detroit, the old murder capital. There was somebody murdered in the house where you are, and you're cranking out a Ouija board.
I was skeptical because I'm, you know, I used to be that way about ghosts and monsters. So they, you know.
I know,
they,
but this whole scenario is just, it's not very bright. I mean, you already know you're in a bad house, and you're bringing out a Ouija board. You're just asking for trouble.
Yeah, so I fall asleep, you know.
You fell asleep?
Yeah. My cousins are sitting there when I wake up. The Ouija board is like 3 inches off the floor, floating there.
Floating above the floor.
Yes, and the pointer was 3 inches above that, floating above the Ouija board. Now, that freaked me out. And I have a real quick question. Guy came on your show a few days ago, called himself Messenger 666.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear him on again or something if he ever comes in, because he says he's correctly predicted 4 signs of the apocalypse.
Yes, I recall.
Okay, because I haven't heard those. I've heard about the supernova, and he said it's 100-some days until something happens. Yeah.
Well, why worry about that when I had a caller just a little while ago who said later today at 6-something or another, 6:57 p.m. Pacific time, this big giant comet's coming by and is going to cause massive electrical storms here on Earth and murder most electronic equipment.
Because he says our government diverted it. Our government can barely put a man on the moon. You know, I don't believe that we can divert a comet.
Not if it's really coming, sir. I don't believe it either. I appreciate your call.
Yeah, have a good night.
Yeah, right. Have a good night and a good day, too, especially a late afternoon, right? O Doom, thy many names. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell, and we're into open and very weird lines.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from January 25th, 2002.
Strange world desire will make foolish people do. I never dreamed that I'd meet somebody like you.
If you could read my mind, love, what a tale my thoughts could tell. Just like an old time movie about a ghost from a wishing well. In a castle dark or a fortress strong, with chains upon my feet, you know that ghost is me. And I will never be set free, as long as I'm a ghost you can't see. If I could read your mind, love, what a tale your thoughts could tell. Just like a paperback novel, the kind the drugstore sells. When you reach the part where the heartaches come, the hero would be me. Heroes often fail. You won't read that book again, because the ending's just too hard to take. Walk away like a movie star who gets burned in a three-way strip.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from January 25th, 2002.
Very early Saturday morning, most everywhere, and kind of a strange one. I'm Art Bell. Stay right there.
Streamlink, the audio subscription service of Coast to Coast AM, has a new name, Coast Insider. You'll still get all the same great features for the same low price. The package includes podcasting, which automatically downloads shows for you, and the iPhone app. You'll also get our amazing download library of 3 full years of shows. That's over 1,000 shows for you to collect and enjoy. If you're a fan of Coast, you won't want to be without Coast Insider. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up. Weird stories on the radio? Must be Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
You know, when I started doing this radio program, Jesse, half of the subjects I was really into, the paranormal, the unusual, ghosts and things like that.
Yeah.
The conspiracy stories, you know, I was a little weary about these, other than the Kennedy assassination. And all of a sudden, I woke up. I simply woke up. Is that what happened with you too?
Yeah, that's when I really started to say, what is going on here? And I started to truly then investigate 9/11. And today, I don't believe the government story of 9/11. Here's the three options. Either we knew about it and allowed it to happen, or we knew about it and participated in it, or these were the dumbest buffoons that could have ever been in charge of our country, who could have all this pre-information. And I started to think they knew it was going to happen. They either are part of it or they allowed it to. There's no doubt in my mind.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from January 25th, 2002.
And back into the night sky we go. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hello, sir.
Hello.
Mr. Bell.
Yes.
I've been listening to talk shows for many, many years, but I got turned on to you. I was channel searching a couple of weeks back, and you played Some Velvet Morning. It knocked me out.
Oh, that song has knocked me
awesome.
Out since I've heard it again. Yes, by the way, be sure your radio's off all the way, please.
Okay, it's about 30 feet away. Is it?
I will.
Is this better?
No, don't do that.
Okay, just give me 1 second and I'll be right back.
Sound like you're
okay?
An elf, so just go turn it off. And,
okay, I got you right now.
I'll wait. That's not good. No, you want to have your radio nearby so you can turn it off when you actually get on the air. That's the trick. Otherwise...
Still there, sir?
Yes.
All right, thank you.
Proceed.
You know, they talk about ghosts. I got a belief that they're on a mission to either scare or a mission to save. And in my case, they saved me. I'm Dave from calling from Hawaii. And as a child, I was raised in Japan as a missionary kid. And we lived about a quarter mile from the railroad tracks. And it's back then. It's those locomotives are huge, 100 feet long. And
what part of Japan were you in?
About 50 miles north of Tokyo.
Okay.
And so it was in the middle. We had our house in the middle of probably 100 acres of rice paddies, and this track, this double track, ran right through the rice paddies.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody. You never see anybody walking along the tracks. It's just impossible. One day, my mom said, Dave, go and buy some a dozen eggs at this old farmer's house across the tracks. So I jump on my bike. I pass over the track. I buy my dozen eggs. I'm coming back, and there's this long train that's I'm coming up probably about 100 feet to the tracks, and I'm timing it. You know, when you're a kid, I'm about 8 years old. You know, you like to take stupid chances. So I see the caboose coming around. So, and this thing's going maybe 65, 70 miles an hour, just chugging and going. And I'm saying, okay, I'm going to see how fast and how close I can get to that caboose. It's a two-lane a railroad track, okay?
Right.
One going one way, one going the other. And there's only about 10 feet, 15 feet at the max separating the two.
Uh-huh.
So this thing, I'm going up to it, and the train is going to my right, toward my right. I see the caboose coming. I'm timing myself. Okay, I'm going to get this sucker. I'm going to go right. I'm gonna kiss this caboose right on the side. And I'm timing that. I'm coming up to that big thing, and I'm going. I must be going 15, 20 miles an hour in my, you know, it's
all of a sudden. You're doing this on a run then.
Right.
Oh, man.
I'm blitzing it, okay?
Stupid kid.
Man, it's okay. And I've crossed this track 1,000 times.
I know.
I should know better.
Yes, indeed.
No, what happens? The caboose passes. I barely skim that caboose. I hear this scream on the left across the tracks on the track area. This whole thing is like 30 feet. It's an abutment up, above the rice paddies. Okay? There's this guy dressed in, there again, it's that word, black. I couldn't see the face. All I could see was a figure waving his arms, screaming at me. And he must have been screaming loud because this train was just passed, all right? I look to the left. I see this guy screaming at me.
Yes.
I look to the right. By this time, I had crossed the track. And I'm headed in this no-fly zone, so to speak, heading for the next track, which is about to come. And I see on my right this huge local... I mean...
Oh, my God. Coming the other way.
Just coming the other way.
And I
must have missed that thing by inches. I mean, I had spray, mist, everything all over my face. I fell down. I cracked a couple of eggs. I mean, it was horrendous. The train, and I'm sitting there shaking. This train passes. It must have taken forever to pass. It passes. The caboose leaves. I'm still on the ground on my knees. I get back shaking on my bike. I don't even, I'm walking the bike over the next, the rail.
Of course.
I'm coming down, and I get on the bike. I don't remember this guy. And I start going down the hill, and I said, wait, what happened? And I look back, and this guy was non-existent. Nowhere. It was rice paddies all around. This black figure.
Yeah, I've been in the. I've gone right through that countryside, actually.
You probably have past our old house in it's next to Tsuchiura. And
yeah, as you move out of Tokyo by train, you do that. You pass right through rice paddies.
Yes. Yes, and nobody walks the train tracks, because so this guy, I've never seen him since, but this guy was a ghost. This guy was a ghost, and he saved my life. To this day, I'm 50 years old, I look back, and I think about that experience all the time.
I appreciate the call, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
That ghost saved his life. Maybe. Maybe. You know, we assign certain motivations to paranormal things that happen, and that might not have been the case. Maybe it did save his life, and maybe it was there to warn him, and maybe it was there to observe what was about to happen, and maybe a lot of things. But, you know, we attach, I guess, after periods of time, we assume, we start to make assumptions about what its motivation was. It may have been there for the instant of death. It may have been there to collect you. It may have been there to warn you. I don't know. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. How you doing?
It's an interesting night, sir. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. I got a story for you, and also got a little bit of a theory on some of this stuff.
Okay.
I've talked to you a couple of times before. My name's Shane. I'm from Tulsa.
Yes, sir.
When I was growing up, my best friend was a girl named Janet. And, I don't know, we were probably 7 or 8 years old. And she had a little sleepover party with a bunch of the girls that were her age, that were her friends.
Right.
And, they played with Ouija board.
Yeah.
For several hours. Okay, this was a long time before the whole thing with Ouija boards came out. I had never even heard of a Ouija board back then. You know, we were just a bunch of kids, and she found it in her mom's closet and was playing with it. For the next, probably, I'd say close to 10 years after that, we had all kinds of problems. Every time that she would get a boyfriend, it got really bad when she started dating. Things would happen. She would wake up in the middle of the night, and she would see, like, a dark figure at the foot of her bed. She'd turn the light on, and it would be gone.
Mm.
She would start to leave her room, and the door would slam in her face.
Oh.
You know, things like that just constantly. But it got really bad after she started dating. It started throwing things at people, usually knives.
Knives.
This happened in public places.
Young teenage girls, they're really, really, really a problem.
But she didn't really handle it well. She freaked all the time. The area that I'm from in Virginia is a very heavy-duty Baptist, you know, hellfire and brimstone kind of place. And the more agitated she would get, the more prolific this thing would get with her.
Mm.
And it got worse and worse and worse. I don't know how many boyfriends she lost because of it. The only time that it didn't seem to have to bother her, or at least as bother as much, was when I was around. And it got to the point where there were times that I would spend weeks at her house because of, you know, the fact that that was the only way that she got any rest, is if I was in the room with her, sitting in the chair beside her bed. And this went on for years, on and off. I mean, it would get really bad, and then it would slack off, and then it would get bad again.
But knives actually through the air?
In the middle of a restaurant, actually.
In the middle of a restaurant?
There's a restaurant. It's called an Italian Village. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
No.
It's just like a little pizzeria kind of thing.
But I know any knife coming through the air in a restaurant would ruin my meal.
Well, there's a little area next to the counter where you place your order and everything, and right there beside it is this little, you know, the standard little cafeteria knife and fork dispenser thing.
Yes.
And there's, you know, sharper knives, and not really like real sharp, but just serrated edge knives.
Right.
In the containers, along with forks and spoons and stuff like that. She was sitting 15 feet away in a booth. There was nobody at the counter, nobody behind the counter. And knives started flipping out of the thing and flying across the restaurant at Chris, who was her boyfriend at the time. And
that
this happened in the presence of 40 people.
This would slow you down,
yeah,
as a boyfriend.
Yeah. It got to the point where nobody would date her because of it.
Sure.
You know, this went on and on. It didn't seem to bother her little brother. It didn't seem to bother her mother. You know, it was very focused around Janet. And, you know, it went on until we were, you know, well up in our teens. But it never, When I was in the house, if it did anything, it was mischievous things, like hide things.
Right.
Of that nature. She would find the Ouija board out on her bed all the time.
Didn't you ever feel compelled to sit down as you noticed she was taking a cotton to somebody or a relationship was beginning? Didn't you ever feel compelled to sit down and say, listen, my friend, you really don't know what you're getting into here?
Well, you know, Janet was my best friend. And, I wanted her to be happy. And, it would come and go. Like I said, she would have, like, spells with... And nothing would happen for a long time, and she would kind of get back in the swing of things.
Do you still maintain contact with Janet?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You do.
Do you think
Janet would talk about this?
I kind of doubt it. She's pretty scared still. She doesn't like to talk about it. She doesn't even like to talk about it with me. I can ask her, but I don't know.
Why don't you ask her for me?
I'll do that. I'll send you an email if she says yes.
Would you?
Yeah.
You know the address, right?
Right. But, this went on right up through, the end of high school and everything. It got involved after I got married. My wife, who at that time was my fiance, Janet used to compete in beauty pageants, and this thing would follow her, to different places. One time, her and my wife was going to help her with, her makeup and her dress and stuff during a particular pageant, and it hid the makeup case from them. And there was nobody. I mean, she had her own little dressing room,
mm-hmm.
and there was nobody else in there. And they had the makeup case. Susan turned around, to help her apply some makeup. Turned back around, the makeup case was gone.
Gone.
They looked for it for 2.5 hours. Couldn't find it.
You talk to Janet for me, okay?
Now, anyway, the other thing I was wanting to say is I've got a theory about this.
I honestly
think that this is fairly valid, given the circumstances of what I've seen. I don't think that everything that people see as, poltergeist, ghosts, that kind of thing, are actually, dead people. I don't think that they're maybe, I'm not saying that they're not, but I don't think necessarily that they started off, they're either people or they started off as people or whatever.
The truth is we don't know what these things are, sir.
Exactly. But the thing of it is I think that they feed on things. I think that when a person is, it's like a stray dog. If you feed it, it comes back.
That's an interesting analogy.
And I think that what is happening is a lot of times when something like this comes into a home, it's looking for a free meal, and it finds like strong emotion or.
And it feeds.
It feeds, and especially I think that you've got good and bad of these things. A particular taste. This particular entity has developed a taste for terror, and in order to obtain food, it's going to start doing stuff to make you afraid. The more afraid you are, the better it's eating.
Yeah, that's entirely possible. Totally possible that it feeds off emotional energy, and fear is about the strongest thing you're going to come upon.
And I'm just curious. Out of your audience, if there was any reported cases of something like this happening to an atheist.
To an atheist?
To an atheist, because
I'll ask.
The lack of belief.
Yeah, no, I understand.
Like, sour the milk or whatever.
I got you. All right, thank you very much. Do these things happen to atheists? Oh, yes, I think so. How they react, it is an interesting question, and perhaps an atheist out there who's had something like this happen, would be willing to comment. That would be intriguing to hear, wouldn't it? West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, hello.
Yes, Art. I wanted to tell about something that I had seen from Inglewood, California. There's a street that goes east-west called Hyde Park Boulevard. It goes between Centinela Boulevard and Marlboro.
Yes, ma'am.
And the only reason I'm saying this, you never know, somebody might be listening who saw this. But it's pretty heavily traveled, and I was going, there's a place right just as you start going eastbound where it goes down and then comes back up, almost like a roller coaster.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was a youngish black couple that were standing, leaning against a fender of a car, maybe like a late 60s or early 70s car.
Right.
And they were standing in the street, facing towards the middle of the road.
Right.
And they were sat just side by side talking. And between them and me was another car, and this guy was driving crazy. I don't know if he was drunk or what, but it almost seemed to me as if he was aiming for them. This happened like maybe 150, 200 feet away ahead of me. And it's like he was aiming at their legs. And, you know, it was like watching something horrible that was going to happen.
Was he driving erratically otherwise?
He actually seemed to be aiming at them.
So he took a bead on them.
That's what it looked like to me.
Okay.
And it's like, you know, you're seeing this happening, and you know it's going to be awful if it happens.
Of course, yes.
Oh, I didn't want to see this, you know. And it was the darndest thing, Art, I ever saw. These two people, in one motion, without flexing their knees, without showing any effort whatsoever, went straight up and back, and they were standing on the fender of that car. Now, I could have seen them, if they had some participation in this miraculous escape, they would have been sprawling, you know, over the hood, or you would have seen them jumping with different motions, but they just, it's as if something was standing above them and picked them straight up, and then they were standing without having moved a muscle on the
fender
of that car.
And so, oh my God, now, are you
sure? And they
sure?
looked at each, and the car swept on past. It didn't hit the car they
were
on.
Are you sure of what you saw?
Oh, I'm positive. Absolutely.
Listen,
this happened in broad daylight.
Listen, hold on for a few.
They looked at each other and laughed.
I know. Listen, I've got a break. Can you hold on?
Okay, sure.
All right, hold on. Maybe this is what happens when you call into the nighttime. I don't know. I'm Art Bell from the High Desert. This is Coast to Coast AM, and we're not done. Not yet.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from January 25th, 2002.
She's coming in 12:30 flight. Moonlit wings reflect the stars that guide me towards salvation. I stopped an old man along the way, hoping to find some old forgotten words or ancient melodies. He turned to me as
Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from January 25th, 2002.
That's me, all right. Right here on the night shift. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Now we take you back to the night of January 25th, 2002. On Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Back now into the night, here's an interesting fast blast from Daniel in Reedley, California, who says, referring to the lady on the line here, he says, you know, that happened to me when I was 71. I was walking along a canal. I'm sorry, he was 7. Not 71. When I was 7, I was walking along a canal, and as I threw a rock in, I fell in. I was drowning. But then I was lifted out and nobody was there. That sound familiar, ma'am?
Oh, that sounds exactly right.
So you are absolutely certain these people were lifted up vertically.
Well, how easily could you jump straight up with somebody else beside you, both of you in one motion, jump straight up and then go backwards without any visible effort? Could you do that?
No.
I couldn't either.
And you saw this with your own eyes.
And then
this car in front of you would have hit them had they remained where they were.
They would have definitely been left with stumps if they were even alive. I mean, it was going to be a horrible thing. The car, you know, veered towards them and paralleled the car that they ended up on top of, that they were standing in front of, probably missed it by, inches, and then continued on down the road. And these two just looked at each other, and they were just stunned, and they just started laughing.
Laughing?
They were laughing like they couldn't believe it.
And
they both experienced this together, and they just couldn't believe it.
Did you stop?
No, I know I didn't.
You kept going.
I kept going. I should have stopped. I should have said, what was that? But it was just an amazing thing to see. You know, and I thought after that, I really begin to think maybe there really are angels, because there's no way possible, even with good reflexes, that they could have done that.
I hear you. I appreciate the story. Thank you. Take care. Maybe angels. I don't know. First time caller line, you're on the air.
Art, how you doing tonight?
Okay, where are you?
I'm actually right near Chicago.
Okay.
A small little town there. Actually, this happened when I was about 5 years old, and I told this to a couple people. It's probably going to make your hair stand on end, even though I know you've heard 1,000 crazy things from 1,000 different people. My father, when I was younger, he was in the real estate, and he bought a lot of property.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the house we eventually moved into, which my parents still live in today, it's legitimately haunted. And I can say this because when I was about 5 years old, he came to see the property, and it was on the market, and it was extremely cheap for the size of the house in the neighborhood. And when it was questioned, the person's brother said, well, my sister died in the house.
Uh-huh.
Turns out she was murdered in the house.
Murdered?
Yes. She was actually pushed down the stairs.
That will drive the price of any house down.
And the funny thing is, when we were going, I mean, everything was still there, all her possessions. Nothing was moved out. When we moved in, everything was, you know, it was just left to us.
Well, you see, people don't like buying houses where there's been a murder for this exact reason.
And so the way it works is, my staircase, it goes down, it turns, and then it goes down again.
Right.
Well, right to the left where the stairs go down is a little room. We call it the library because we store our books in there and stuff like that. But a couple of days into the house, my parents were cleaning it out and everything like that. I went into this room, and there was a chair in the middle of the room. And I sat down in the chair. In fact, I'm pretty nervous talking about it now. I sat in this chair, and there was on top of these shelves were these mannequin heads.
Mannequin heads?
She wore wigs.
Oh, I see.
And the thing is, when I sat in the chair, it felt like somebody had, like, I don't know if you've ever been hit in the head, and you get that feeling for a second.
Yes.
You know, it was like that. I kept this feeling like a hit in my head, and then I heard a chattering. And the chattering got louder, and the chattering got louder, and it got louder. And I'm 5 years old, and I'm sitting in this chair, looking at these heads, and it was very intense, and my father screamed at me, he's like, get out of that chair, and I snapped out of it.
Do you think those heads were chattering?
I don't know. I don't think it was the heads. I think it was more of the, I had all this going on, and I'm looking at these heads, I'm looking all around the room, I'm only like 5 years old, and he screams at me, he's like, get out of the chair, that's the chair she died in.
Oh, sheesh.
She fell down the stairs, crawled over to the chair, got in the chair, and died.
And died there.
Uh-huh.
Ay, 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 ay.
Yeah.
So, you don't live there anymore, right?
Actually, no, I moved out about 3-4 months ago. Just recently got married. Moved out.
Very recently, huh?
Yeah, but instances all over the house. I've seen her. I had that experience. I saw her silhouette go across windows. And this is like not coincidental stuff. Like when I was a kid, I used to tell my friends I have a ghost in the house, and they'd be like, "No, you don't." And one time, just joking around, I said, her name was Marguerite. I said, "Marguerite, why don't you show yourself?" And a silhouette went across the window of a figure. Yeah, my mom saw her from her bedroom. She was reading a book. She looked up. We have a hallway, and she looked up from her where she was in bed. The door was open. She said she saw her float across, look at my mom, keep floating. Yeah.
All right. Well, I appreciate the story, sir. And I know exactly the kind of stairwell that he's talking about. It goes down one flight of stairs, and then it turns and goes down another flight. But before it turns, there's a little area there, and a lot of people have little storage areas in that area. You know, it's easy to build a little storage area in there. And the chair where she died, oh, great. Well, you see, that is why people don't move into those kind of homes where there's been a murder. Yikes. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Mr. Bell, calling from Chicago area WLS.
Yes, sir.
I had a few stories. I had an entity attack one evening that left a scar on my arm.
What kind of attack, sir?
It was very strange. It was waking up, and it was like the twilight time,
sure,
in the morning.
Sure.
And it was definitely a human figure, and the only way I could describe it, it was almost like a melee. In a sense, it was, I was confronted with this entity, and then, we were standing and, like, squared off against each other, and...
This entity that looked like what?
It was a human, some type of, it was a male human, it looked like dressed in armor, and, at some point, I saw something out of the corner of my eye in the dream state, and something hit my arm. And then the next morning when I woke up, I thought it was just a strange dream, but I had a scab running right by the crook of my elbow, running up my arm. And it was in directly where this thing had hit me in the dream state.
And it had already scabbed by morning?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was scabbed over in the morning.
Oh.
It was very, very strange.
So who did you tell?
I called to let you know that it was an entity attack, but it wasn't any type of dark being, because I've seen a shadow person, and this was a male human in the dream state that left this scar. But this shadow person encounter that I had was very strange, because I was sitting at a desk in front of a computer, and it was almost like a perspective change, because I saw the back of the chair, and behind the chair crouched was the shadow person,
mm-hmm,
in a humanoid form. And it was strange, because I was looking at the computer, and this was behind the chair, and I could see that myself in the chair and the shadow person.
Well, let me try and give you an explanation of why this might be happening. This is just a stab in the dark, folks, and it could be totally wrong. But in the world of computers, in the days of computers, which are these days, we have monitors, and they have scan rates. And they have very fast scan rates. A really good monitor has a very fast scan rate, so fast that you do not perceive with your eye the flickering of the screen. That used to be a problem. There would always be a little flicker in there, right? Well, today's modern monitors are set up so that they're moving so fast, scan rate-wise, you don't see that flicker. However, what I do believe may be occurring to you is that your eyes and your brain, because your eyes are attached to your brain, are adjusting to this different scan rate. Are you all following me? It's just a theory, folks. I believe your eyes are adjusting to this new and different scan rate, and as you spend hours in front of a computer, you slowly begin to see at a different frequency. And as you see at a different frequency, you begin to see things that exist in a different frequency. Now, you've heard the Art Bell theory of why some things may be seen that heretofore have not been seen, and why it's getting so prolific, and frequently why it seems to have to do with people who are nearby computers. Just a thought, folks. It's mine, and I've been thinking it over. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, hi, Art. Hi, this is Bill in West Hartford, Connecticut.
Yes, Bill.
The caller earlier asked if any atheist had ever had any paranormal or...
And you probably just about broke a finger trying to get in from that point on. So, Bill, have you ever had an experience?
Actually, thank goodness, no, except for one thing that is very interesting. I'll tell you about in 1 second. It's not a ghost, but it certainly is very inexplicable to me. Now, I want to say, first of all, before I tell you the event, if anything did paranormal happen to be at all, I would be scared blank. No end. I would not want it. Not want at all any paranormal or ghost events or monster events ever to happen to me in my life. Now,
having said that,
sometime in the 1970s, roughly between 1970 and 1980, I can't pin it down any easier than that. When I was living at my parents' house at that time, I was in my 20s, between age 20 and 30 at the time. In my room upstairs in my parents' house, still in the same city, West Hartford, Connecticut, there was one time, this has to do with a pool of water, I'm going to explain, a pool of water about a diameter of a yard, 3 feet, 3 foot yard circle, of water that inexplicably was on the floor in my bedroom. Now, it had been raining outside. Yes, it had been raining, but the windows were closed, I remember. There's no opening on the roof, and this is right in the center of the floor of my room, not near the window, so it wasn't like the rain somehow seeped through an open window. I remember the windows were closed.
So how, Bill, did it get there?
Yes, how did, a large circle of water, about 3 foot, say like a big pool of water. My mother said to me, did you urinate on the floor? Of course not, Mom. No, I did not. Believe me, I did not urinate, do that on the floor. She was inexplicable. She went and she got some mops and dried it up, and I was just wondering, how the heck did a big pool of water get on the floor? Now, that's the only thing in my whole life that is inexplicable to me that I can't explain. I don't know how it happened. Now, does that mean a ghost, would you say, or a monster or a ghost or something, or how would you say?
No, Bill, I wouldn't say that. I'd just say, I don't know what I'd say. I'd say... I wouldn't put it in the category of a monster or a ghost or anything else. Probably. But then again, Bill, since you don't believe in anything, why would you put it in any category at all? Except it got you in trouble. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Oh, Art.
Yes.
This is Jenny in St. Petersburg, Florida.
Yes.
WFLA.
Yes, ma'am.
I just wanted to tell you, several years ago, I was just waking up in the morning, and I saw like a small sort of human form walking around my bed.
Walking around your bed?
It was sort of like playing around my bed.
Playing?
Yeah.
You mean like a little person?
A little person. And I sort of opened my eyes, and it seemed to be like a... sort of, I don't know, maybe this was just my perception. It looked sort of reddish blue or something. And when I saw it, it was surprised that I had seen it.
Yeah, that's classic. Everybody that's talked to us almost about a shadow person, especially when they see them straight on, the way you apparently did, and they notice each other, they get startled.
It was startled. And then it ran... It was shocked and startled, and then it ran around my dresser and disappeared.
Huh. Well, how were you at that point?
Well, I was sort of shocked, you know, and then, I don't know, I didn't know what to think of it. I had never heard of shadow people, so I had no idea what it was, and I was living in Virginia Beach, Virginia at the time. That's where I'm from. And you know that the Casey Foundation is there.
I sure do.
And so I asked a few people about it, and most people seemed to think that I had seen some kind of demon.
But dear, you may have seen a demon. I don't know. You may have seen just the classic shadow person. It may be that shadow persons are demons. I wish I had the answers. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hi,
turn your radio off for us, please.
Okay.
Okay, so what's up?
I want to ask you if you've ever had pokefish. I heard the man from Alaska earlier.
Yes.
Have you had pokefish?
No, I don't think so. Why? Why do you ask?
Well, my father's Native American, and we had pokefish every year until I was like 6 years old.
And
pokefish is fish that has been buried in the permafrost for 6 to 12 months. And
right.
then it's eaten the next season. But anyways, I grew up in a house that had headstones out lining our garden in our front yard, and so we had very interesting entities around the house, and I swore I had an imaginary friend named Lou. And when I turned 18, I met her in Alaska. She's my cousin.
Really?
Yes.
Well, maybe you ate too much pokefish.
It's possible. I don't know.
It is definitely a strange world we live in, isn't it?
Yes. I thought it was kind of creepy because I had never seen pictures of her before, ever, and it was just like looking into a mirror.
I hear you. All right. Well, listen, thank you very much for the call. We're out of time. I've got to go. I leave you with a song that I think is most appropriate tonight, one that Crystal Gale sang for me and brought to me. From the High Desert, I'm Art Bell. Ta-ta now.
Midnight in the desert, shooting stars across the sky. This magical journey will take us on a ride, filled with the longing, searching for the truth. Will we make it to tomorrow? Will the sun shine on you? Midnight in the desert, and we're listening. Ooh, we're listening to you.
Midnight in the desert.